Hey, everyone. 372 pages. We'll never get back. Michael J. Nelson here. This is the Bad Book Podcast. I am joined, as always, by Connor Lestoka.
The bad boy of the Bad Book Podcast.
Oh, if you want to be bad with a book, Connor's the boy to be bad with. Boy. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's a deep cut.
Me a second. It is.
Yes. Well, I thought that's what you were referencing. But look, all good things must come to an end. It is with heavy hearts that we take to the last episode of Midnight Sun. How are you feeling, Connor? You holding up okay?
Heavy hearts, heavy book. You know, this is the rare one you could throw your back out when you throw it across the room in disgust. So, yeah, I'm good. I hauled the book down 1,000 miles from Vermont to North Carolina, where I'm in my parents' house just to get some winter escape. But it was a bittersweet moment to finish it.
So, wait a minute. So, you told me once that you bought me some fermented Greenland shark.
Yeah.
And that didn't make the trip back home. That was thrown into the garbage can by the side of the road. But yeah. Somehow this book makes it all the way in your car.
If the
it's
book
pride
had,
of
know,
place in your car.
I wouldn't have put it past it if the book had emitted the odor of the Hakarl. But, you know, the book, you know, there was like sort of like bugs crawling out of it at some point. It emitted an eerie cry of the damned, maybe when we hit the New Jersey border. But no, there was no stench. So.
Right, right. I don't have the physical copy for this one, I think.
Oh, right.
That might be the first time that I don't. So, yeah, for me, it's just scrolling down on the damnably long scroll that it took. This last reading, my God, this is our longest ever, right?
It has to be. In terms of the word count, this was like slightly above. We pretty much did 100 pages of the print book every session here, but this was maybe 106, so probably.
Well, I, in honor of this, the final reading, it's not often that we get celebrities, especially internet phenoms, on this show.
That's certainly
but I was
not
able
often,
to. I would say, what is the percentage? It's fairly low. I'd say zero.
Uh-huh.
But I do. I have a special guest.
Wow.
I think he's come up on this program before. Naturalist and. I guess a naturalist daredevil, Coyote Peterson.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Coyote yep. Peterson
That's
is
not
here.
Fake. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he has just countless millions of views on, I believe he has, it's YouTube primarily, but I think mm-hmm. he also may have netted a TV show from it.
I hope so. I mean, so he's the guy that gets stung by things.
That's right. That is his. That's his shtick. Is that he gets stung by things, and so he's agreed, thankfully, to read the final chapters.
Huh?
You've seen when he puts like a tarantula wasp on his arm, and then he just reacts to it. So I thought, you know, let's see how he reacts to reading this.
Oh, sure.
So so I've got him on the line.
Great.
And. So, we've got him on the line. He and his producer. His producer's kind of a character in his videos, if you've seen it, Mark. So let's get him on the line and see if he'll read this last chapter right in front of us here.
Sweet. Coyote, Mark.
Yeah. Oh, here they are. Yeah, that's their theme music.
Nice. They play their theme music on phone calls, huh?
Just go ahead and read the book and tell us what you think. Oh, all right. Which chapter are you
okay,
on?
Let me get back here.
You all right? What are you feeling?
Go!
Oh, he's...
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Okay.
It doesn't sound well.
No, it doesn't sound like he's enjoying it. Coyote? Just take a sec. Read the... Why don't you read right through...
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, all he's right. reading oh. the epilogue now.
Oh, the prom,
what are you
yeah.
feeling? What does it feel like?
Give me a sec.
Just give him a second. Connor, do you have any questions for him?
Well, yeah. Did you find the car chase?
Oh, my God.
Intriguing,
guys, this is super bad.
Yeah, super bad. That's what I was thinking.
It is. It was not good.
Move this out of the way.
What about the sort of like flash forward chapter?
Hold on. I got to try to control my heart rate.
Well, I mean, it wasn't
try
that
to get a
exciting.
Touch out right I mean, there with the stinger when you see there's blood.
Blood.
Okay,
oh,
try
goodness.
To get a shot because I can get
a lot of blood in that dance.
Wow. Okay. Well, all right. Anyway, that's That's Coyote Peterson reading the final chapters of the book. I have to say, my impression was roughly the same.
It was, yeah. It didn't have the dramatic music, but I pretty much was making the same noises, I think. I'd like to hear, like, the you know, they sometimes will release, you know, the audio of, like, David Lee Roth singing, like, Panama without the music, yes. And it just sounds outrageous.
Yes.
Him making those noises without the would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, it's a sound of noise. It's probably the same noises Edward was making outside Bella's window.
I think I had previewed the experience of finishing the book and getting to the epilogue, so you were not surprised by that. I think we brought that up, that the epilogue is about as long as any chapter in the universe. I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was painful, though, to even again when I came across it. I'm like, well, it's probably not as long as I remembered it. My God. Oh, it's so long.
Yep, there's a lot of length, there's a lot of padding, there's a lot of conversations that if you have read along with this, you might seem they might seem familiar to you because they're themes that have been well covered throughout the course of the 670 Ooh. Pages, but you know, there's nothing for it. We've got to get through this. So, you want to get started?
Yeah, let's get started. Oh, you know, Coyote cried out like, "Oh my God, there's blood!" Mm-hmm. And he's right. That's chapter 26, but that's not our first chapter.
Right?
But
yeah. Anyway, no, chapter 25 is race.
Yes.
So I you know, it's been a long journey, but I was like, "Are we finally going to get into, you know, Edward's theories here?" Like his. You know, he's had a couple beers, and now he's letting slip who he thinks is you know, the one master race or something.
Yeah, I was, you know, is he going to get into the, like, Armenian genocide or something? I don't know.
Make his case for reparations or something.
But sadly,
no. It is a race against the clock.
Sadly, we get phrases like "go go one" and "go go two."
So where we left off is that the tracker has somehow found James has somehow found that Bella is
wait go- who's now who the, now
the James
oh the tracker
the tracker yes yes
okay
they do allude to that at some point in time. At this chapter, he says something like, you know, such a name, you know, could not even begin to describe the foulness that he was. It was so benign. It's like, well, yeah, okay. we made that point 12 years ago.
Yes, James.
He has followed Bella to Phoenix, so the crew is heading there on a plane, Edward, Cullen, and Emmett, which, you know, you'd think that the vampires might stand out doing this sort of very public travel. I was very concerned about that, but then it sort of got explained away. It said, though our rose window shade was down, there was an excess of direct sunlight in the plane. And I was like, my God, he's going to be discovered for sure. But then he said, my arms were folded so that my hands were hidden. So never fear.
Well, he's been this, you know, to use Tom Selleck's reverse mortgage phrase, this is not his first rodeo. This guy has been... He has been doing this. He's been taking flights for... What time did commercial air flight begin in the United States? I assume he was one of the first people to hook a flight to New Orleans to party down or whatever.
Right, yes, exactly. He called up Orville and Wilbur as soon as it was possible, being like, you got to get me one of those.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's done this before. So, yeah, not surprising. I do notice that on the plane, this doesn't have to do with him, but he overhears a guy. He says, I caught one man thinking that we'd all remove the sweatshirts before we made it down the length of the jetway. So, again, I want to stop and drill down on this guy's life that he just landed in Phoenix and this is his first thought about these people walking down the... Like, they're going to take their... He's not like, God, I can't wait to see my daughter. I haven't seen her in yeah. 3 weeks. I went to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope. He's very focused on Edward's sweatshirt wearing. He's chosen the wrong attire for the Phoenix sun.
So. Yeah. Some of the people believe that they might be northern bumpkins who had no frame of reference for spring temperatures in the Southwest.
Because so that's what the North is known for, right? Producing bumpkins?
Yes. It is. And it never really struck me that that was a very regional specific term until I read something that was so glaringly not something that anyone has ever said.
Right. Speaking of not things that I've experienced, I've never, this, and this could be one of those, we're going to get tons of letters.
Okay.
The seatbelt light being turned off after the doors are opened?
Huh.
That's what happens. I have never experienced that. My entire life it has been, as soon as it stops taxiing and the jetway is lined up, that is when everyone immediately clicks their seatbelt, pulls their phone out, and starts doing. But in this sequence of events, they wait very, very patiently for the seatbelt sign to be turned off, despite the fact that they've landed, the jetway is pulled up, the door has unsealed, and
alien
then the
behavior,
thing goes off.
Yes.
So I don't know. Maybe
you mentioned the jetway. I found it. I liked that she gave that the proper name. Like she capitalized J in jetway to indicate it was a proper jetway brand jetway.
Oh, like realtor.
I guess so.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
And the other thing that struck me, I mean, we don't have to, we're paying a lot of attention toward the plane behavior, but I think we're all sort of obsessed with it. But it says the seatbelt turned off with a tinny ding. Then all three of us were moving. We eased around the humans and were at the door so quickly that the steward took a surprise step back. And so in a book filled with undead vampires, werewolves, teenagers falling in love in 2 hours, possibly the most unrealistic thing that they were able to push around people who were in the aisle as well on a plane without getting a single dirty look or push back.
Right. And that shocked the attendant person there that they would want to get off the plane first. Like this, you don't want to wait your turn like
right.
everybody else patiently. I'm very surprised by this. Yeah, that is that's unbelievable. Have you ever experienced? Of course, you have the poor person who does have to go against the grain.
Oh, to get her bag that was a few things back.
Yes,
yes,
and it's more than three rows where it's you can't enlist the. Excuse me, can I just ask you to ask that person to pass that blue bag to me? It's like I have to go back 13 rows. Excuse me, pardon me, excuse me.
Yeah.
And you have very little sympathy unless you're not involved in the exchange. If you're just watching from afar, like, look at that poor son of a bitch.
Right.
But if you have to actually move, you're like, no, sorry, you got...
Well, yeah, everyone, it is 100% if it's not you, you immediately lose any potential that it ever could be you, that it could be someone you love who's in that situation. It's just like, what are you trying to pull here?
Yes. Yeah. Look, we're all trying to survive. You broke the rules. Live with it.
And the same goes for, if you have a tight connection and they say, please remain in your seat so that anyone with a tight connection can get off the plane first. Yeah. And people are just like, well,
mine by its loose definitions is tight, I guess, in that. I have to go buy some chocolate stars and eat them in a chair for an hour. So,
plain humor.
Hey, we all have to do it. So, all right. So now he's now pulling up with the Alice thing, which I have expressed extreme frustration with.
Yeah, and
it is dramatically a disaster for this book that Alice is seeing things and he can read her mind and see in her mind as she does the Tom Cruise in that futuristic, swiping different realities or whatever.
Tom Cruise, yeah, Minority Report, but also I think we've mentioned Next with Nicolas Cage as he can see 2 minutes into the future. A terrible movie, but is pretty much her ability right here. Like there's a climactic scene in that movie where he is walking and he will he'll see 2 minutes into the future where the FBI agent gets gunned down and he will then point her in the other direction type of thing.
Right. There's also one with Denzel Washington where they invent something that they can see. They somehow like track 24 hours into the future, but they can only, and of course it's a thing where they send a camera in, but if, then he, someone that he loves dies. So he's like, could a human go in it? And they're like, what? We've never. So of course they shoot him into the, I don't know, whatever it is.
Right. They work well visually, not so much with words on a page.
Yes. But anyway, he says, Alice showed me a map in her head. So is this like, you know, you're trying to drive or you're trying to get to a wedding or whatever, and your spouse is like, why are you going this way? Here, you should go over here. Like, get that out of my way. I'm trying to concentrate. Do I go left up? Well, that's what I'm trying to say. Look at the map. Like,
right.
Alice, stop it, please. I'm trying to press the go to button here.
Right. And a map, like, is that really what you'd want to see in that point in time? Wouldn't it just be like the actual, you know, the street corner you're supposed to turn at, like the sort of a way a video game would present it to you? Like, that might be more helpful than, you know, which way am I looking on the map? Which way is north? Which way is the car moving?
Yes, I a friend picked me up in Paris near the Arc de Triomphe and said, we need to get north somewhere. I don't know. And he was in a rage because he had to figure out how to drive. And he said, so here's the map. And he handed me a French map and said, so now where do I go? I'm like, I just got in the car. I have no idea. I don't, where are we? What is happening? Like, come on, figure it out. Like,
yeah, you know. It is a power move to be the guy who's like, well, I'm the one driving. So this is on you. It's like, right. Oh, okay. Like, that is my, yes, my go-to.
So we get a lot of that in this upcoming thing, and I don't know, but right away you did notice that the nitrous thing, that was, did you correctly identify that? Was that your?
I think this might have been the controversial one where it was, I identified it as fanfic, and I think you marked that right, but then I think it was revealed that it was real, like in the guy wrote us an email later being like, what the hell? That was 100% from the book.
I think that could be correct because I might have even edited out something saying Connor will never go for this.
Wow.
I might have edited out like the two buttons labeled go, go one and go, go two. But when it came to me, it was no indication. It said, here's the fanfic, and it was in a folder.
Huh.
So it didn't say real on it. It just was like, so
maybe,
I had to figure it out.
Okay.
So well, anyway.
Our system is flawed after only 87 episodes of this thing and countless hundreds of hours of talking into microphones.
That's right.
I like that this was an interesting thing for me. They're moving towards the garage, and we get a lot of time in this garage, but it says, we were through the baggage claim area and into the elevator bay. Several groups with carts loaded with suitcases were waiting for the next set of doors to open. We moved in synchronization to the stairwell. So do you really think that they were actually moving in synchronization like a boy band or the Jackson 5 or something? Or were they just sort of all going in the same direction at vaguely the same time?
No, I think there was an above shot, like straight above them, and they were doing like Busby Berkeley swimming pool moves as they went, I assume.
If they're trying to avoid, you know, attention like they repeatedly emphasize they are, that might not be that might attract some attention in a crowded airport.
His hands were folded in a way that you couldn't see him. Okay, so all questions answered, asked and answered, sir.
But yeah, then they start picking out a car, and they find like a hideous souped up WRX ST1 that has orange bubbles the size of Edward's head rising from deep purple lava paint job.
Yeah, I couldn't picture what that meant, so. Right. Rely on you. What is that?
Maybe like some sort of psychedelic trapper keeper. I have no idea what what you're actually going for. It seems unrealistic. And everything that's about to happen in terms of driving, nitrous, boosting, all this stuff. I'm not a car guy. Not into competitive driving. But at some point in time, I was like, oh, this has to be the same level of accuracy and detail that we got from the baseball scene. Like,
yes.
If you are a car guy, you're reading this being like, what the hell is she talking about?
Right. And I also felt, what the hell, where the hell are they going?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Like we know, obviously, they're going somehow to save her because they're seeing visions. But it was weird to have them just racing off going, I don't know where they're going.
Yeah, it's been extremely unclear because it's all, you know, him reading snippets of Alice's thoughts. He's seeing stuff like, you know, these were whole sentences like the tracker waiting, then blood, so much blood. Bella's handwriting, an explanation, a hostage, an apology, a plea. And it's like, it just doesn't work to, you know, it does fill in the details later, but much later. And it's very frustrating to not understand sort of what the stakes are here.
Yes. And when she was filling it in later, that's when I became even more annoyed. Like, some of this information could have been meted out before.
Right.
There was no reason.
Right.
And now we're just mired down in this. It's already happened.
Right.
I'm done. I'm out. I want this over with.
Once Alice can see the future and she's seen, you know, into the future enough that she's seen Bella as a vampire, and we know that Edward can read those thoughts instantaneously, it does sort of, it is a cheat to sort of mete it out like that to the audience.
But you gotta admit, deeply satisfying when you found out that what I surmise might be some sort of chair rail in a hotel room or lobby.
Mm-hmm.
When you found out what that was,
yes,
the gold
right.
band running around the middle of the room, you must have gone, oh, she did it. You right. miracle worker. You pulled it out. That was stunning. That's for a future
chapter.
Yeah. So he gets into the stupid car and he says, it took me 12 seconds to shift through the gears until I was in sixth. I didn't plan to shift down again. Like, okay. Well, you're a bad driver then, because you're going to stall the car when you need to shift down. It's going to make a couple of hideous noises and halt to a stop on the freeway. So
yes.
Don't maybe not make this decision right now. Maybe wait till circumstances dictate. How about?
Right. Yeah, because they do. I think he has seen that it is in a more residential or commercial district, not on one of Arizona's freeways. So it's probably a bad decision.
Right.
I also like, you know, this, we haven't had a lot of action, but the scene of them leaving the parking garage, I just imagined it was so mundane, but described with such a, you know, drama. And I could just imagine like a Hans Zimmer sort of like score behind it from like a Christopher Nolan movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to read a few of the passages. My hands clenched the neon orange steering wheel too hard. I forced my fingers to relax as I pulled up to the automated window. Carlisle grabbed the ticket, stuck behind the visor in an obvious way, and held it out to me. Alice snagged it. She could see I was likely to put my fist through the card reader as I was to wait patiently for the machine to work. I drove another 2 feet forward so Jasper could roll down his window and pay with one of the no-name cards we used to stay anonymous.
Oh, we maybe could have used Coyote's dramatic music.
Exactly.
He
pulled his dark sleeve to his fingertips. Then there was the barest glimmer as he reached out the window to shove the ticket into the slot.
Oh,
so they are paying a garage, parking garage exit fee there.
And then it goes on. The card reader made a whirring sound. Jasper punched a button. Why is she is speaking of Christopher Nolan, she is again freezing time on things that really you need to stop freezing time on these.
It's like one of those shots from, you know, the Queen movie or the Bohemian Rhapsody or like Taken 3, where it's like in this 5 second shot, the camera cuts 48 times to Jasper hitting the parking ticket button and extending his hand from 8 different angles.
Right. Oh, let me see. What do I have here?
By the time they exit, into the finally the parking garage. We get this description, which I want you to identify whether this was written by Stephanie Meyer or Dan Brown.
Ooh, all right.
Everything was flat and sunblasted around the highway, wide open with no place to hide from the light. The sky an enormous pale blue dome that seemed almost white in the glaring heat. The whole valley was bared to the sun like food in a broiler. A few twig-like trees, scarcely clinging to life, were the only features breaking up the dull expanses of gravel. So that could just as easily be Dan Brown about Seville.
Seville, I was going to say. Man, place sounds great.
Yeah.
Here's a weird... is this a Meyerism? This has come up before. A few cars swerved in surprise, but they were all a distance behind me by the time they reached. I mean, cars don't swerve in surprise. Drivers do. We understand that you're in a car. The driver's swerved in surprise, right? But cars themselves don't. The driver went, "Oh, what is my car doing? Stop that!"
Right? They are they Pixar anthropomorphic cars, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there's more. There's more nice like car talk. It says like I could probably get another 30 miles an hour out of the STI, but I didn't want to push her too hard. There was no way to know if the engine had been tuned to stage 2 or 3. It would be touchy, unstable. I could only watch the oil pressure and temperature and listen to carefully to how hard the engine was working. So did she have, is one of her sons into cars or something? Did she let him sort of just like indulge him with his gearhead talk here or something?
Oh, that's a good theory. I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe she is. That was inappropriate of me to speculate that just because it's Stephanie Meyer, she isn't into souped up muscle cars. But
well, I understood what you were saying, but it was more like it just seems dragged in. Like she doesn't have the actual passion for it. But
sure.
Again, maybe that's condescending. I don't know. But she. Here's something I need to know. I don't have any idea what they're talking about here, and I know that I should. We were all sharing his battle focus now, something he'd used to keep his newborns on track back in his war years. I assume he means newborns being the vampires.
Mm-hmm. Yep. In and one the of the battle movies, there was a newborn army.
Yeah.
The battle focus, I think, is maybe what he was using on the Laurent and James on the baseball field to keep them from noticing Bella.
Oh, I thought that was extreme boredom.
Oh, okay. Not battle focus.
Okay.
But yeah, he says that as a man of peace, Jasper struggled, but as a man of war, he was more than I'd ever imagined.
I didn't. That's the other thing. I didn't know what that meant.
Exactly. It's when our only image is him for the movies, it's hard to imagine. But I guess he's covered in scars from his battle focus days, and he's just that's his special ability.
So Jasper had a newborn army at one point?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. That just it's a throwaway sentence, you know. If I mentioned that to you around the water cooler one day, you'd be like, "Well, sure, I don't need to know any more information."
What was he doing with it? He was just going around killing
army.
A lot.
Do you need me to draw you
a... I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. Alice, show me a map.
Right. It's baffling because Jasper barely even speaks in this book, but then we get these details thrown in like that.
So they stop. So this car fails. I forget what happens.
Well, at some point in time, I think they know that the police are looking for it because it sort of tore out of the... parking garage and then has been driving 180 miles an hour. So I believe they're setting up a barricade ahead, and Alice sees that and they realize they need to get a new vehicle.
And then Alice saw it, a glossy black BMW S1000RR. And then in the italicized Edward, it's impossible. The image of myself astride the sleek black motorcycle, okay, I guess it's a motorcycle, was so appealing that for a second I ignored her. Edward, you're going to need every one of us. That one took me, it's like, damn it, you're making me reread this. He's imagining himself grabbing a BMW motorcycle,
yeah,
and she's like flashing, but she pushes the map aside, and the 4,000 futures she's showing him, and says, you can't, and then is speaking to him at the same time,
yeah.
In his head.
Yeah. He's able to process all those things at the same time as he's envisioning himself. He's like lowering his shades almost to look at this hot new car as they're racing to rescue his girlfriend who's being tortured at the moment.
And he's seeing at the same time, he's seeing all the possible ways the car can go through the traffic is another feature, I believe.
Yes. And he's looking at an overpass a half a mile ahead and making calculations. The shadow that it threw was only 53 feet long. The sun was almost directly above us now. So he's estimating shadow distance down to the foot as all this is happening. It's like, that's the sort of thing that like, I would be this, like, I don't know. That's like David Brent being like, yeah, Chris Finch, he can estimate the shadow down to the foot, the distance of a shadow.
Oh, that's what made this such bad. I knew she feels like she's writing an action scene, but it's extremely confusing, and there's no action. You're not, the pace of it is just boring as hell because it's so confusing.
Yes.
But they decide to, instead of doing the BMW S1000RR4X7432, mm-hmm. top speed 190, they go for a...
Porsche Cayenne SUV, I think?
Yes, and they describe who's in it. A family would slow us down. Alice used my decision to take this car and look ahead into what that meant. Luckily, there was only one driver inside. Right. A 30-something female with a dark brown ponytail. I had a suspicion about who this brown ponytail woman might be. Susan Fletcher. I think this is a crossover.
Yeah, well,
Susan Fletcher's Porsche Cayenne.
She's shifting with those legs of hers.
Yes.
Well, that would tie in with the Dan Brown guest paragraph about the scorching heat.
Yeah, there you go.
Nothing compared to the scorching heat of she doesn't need heated seats when she's sitting on them. but this woman with the ponytail does have a family because it's indicated by those stickers on the back. She has a husband and two girls, it says. and so our heroes pull her out of the car, or they I guess sort of like run her off the road or force her off the road. And it says she had 1 second to react to the fact that the most handsome man she'd ever seen was responsible for running her off the road. That's Carlisle. And then she was collapsing into him. She probably hadn't even had time to feel the prick of the needle. Carlisle carefully laid her unconscious body on the raised concrete shelf beside the shoulder. So they drug the woman and then lay her down on the side of a freeway. Where, yes. Like, I mean, have you ever changed a tire on the side of a freeway? The chance of you dying is you're just like, this could happen any minute now if one guy is looking at his phone and just like swerves into me or something.
Oh, it's terrifying.
It's terrifying. 100% non-zero. So they've just left her there.
Well, but then what happens after they do this? So this act of changing cars, they look at the possibilities. Alice saw injuries, but no fatalities.
That's Emmett has thrown the other car into traffic to cause a massive pileup to slow down the police. But yeah.
Oh, thank you. So, you know, when you hear this, someone pointed this out to me once. This is a rather blithe way of saying it on the news, is like, no deaths, but, 14 injuries. Like, okay, there's people who are blind,
yeah, right.
who have severe brain injuries, will never walk again. Who can't speak, who yeah. require assistance for the rest of their lives, have mental and physical disabilities that are indescribable, and they get described as injuries, but no deaths.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, man.
They've just caused the worst thing that's ever going to happen to a bunch of people to happen.
Yeah.
And not so even if you, yeah, even if you're just like the airbag goes off and you're like, that was a close one. Oh, I'm just financially ruined now. This is going to be, you know, affect the rest of my like the decade now to recover from this.
Yeah, I guess we're supposed to imagine like, four fingers pinched between the seat buttons or something like, ow, that was bad. But no, this is terrible. Just terrible.
Right, exactly. But at least that woman is on the side of the road, probably having these cars that are just driven by injured drivers swerving into her.
No, she definitely got a tire that just flew off another car and hit her.
Hopefully not in her legs, though.
Oh, boy. Ooh, la, la.
But then, yeah, so that's sort of the massive catastrophe they've caused in order to rescue the 17-year-old girl is sort of where I left off this. They start driving again, and they're using a weird system for everyone sort of like looks out the window. All the other passengers look out the window, I think like Ace Ventura, and then Edward's able to read their thoughts to sort of gain, 360 surround vision for what he's going. Did you pick up on that?
Oh, God. I confess I didn't.
Okay. Yeah. But where does it say that? Everyone just looks out the mirror because everyone looks out the windows and he reads their thoughts and he says that that's better than mirrors as he's doing that. Yeah.
He also, this is a thing too. Alice, give me every possibility. So that's a command to mm-hmm. Alice.
Yeah.
So she then looks at, wasn't before she was giving like Vegas odds.
Yes.
Now she's, every possibility is, I assume, is infinite, right? I mean, I don't want to get into philosophical timelines here, but.
Right. But yeah, if a butterfly in Tacoma flaps its wings you know, at a slightly different second, then she's going to have another billion possibilities to throw at him.
So, yeah. So, like, hand me, you know, a wet wipe is the same as give me every possibility. He's crying out as he's driving along and estimating shadows on overpasses again.
Yeah. And I wonder if she's like, you know, you set a computer to do some, like, big calculation, and it's like, this is going to take up my processing system for the next 3 hours, and you can't stop once it started. She's like, you said every possibility. Now I'm explaining to you, like, what happens if, you know, Tim McGee in Florida stops for McDonald's and they're out of nuggets. Like, I it's on you. I can't stop now.
Well, you know what I meant. Nugget exclusion was in there, and you knew it.
It's implied.
Then we're on to chapter 26.
Yeah, they end that chapter by arriving at a dance studio, and they park the car, and Alex has already seen blood all over the shattered mirrors and pooling on the floor. But then a chapter ends and then begins with Edward bursting through the door like the Kool-Aid man.
Yep.
He sort of pulls an oh yeah and just, you know, hurls himself through the door, because I guess that second was one that Alice said you cannot take the half second to actually open the door and rush through.
The first sentence is actually all caps, through the door. So just in case you missed that, there it is. The door shatters and they're a little circumspect about what they do to the tracker in this, I felt like.
Very frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, in the movie, isn't there a thing in the movie where there's like a scene where the camera kind of goes high and you see shadows of them just like tearing a body to pieces?
I remember that as well. I thought it was sort of like, you know, it's like they're sort of out of focus in the background was my remembrance of it.
Yeah, and there's kind of like a feeding.
Yeah, but they're like, you can see them. They're like raising their hands up, and they're like, it's like the Office Space, you know, taking it to the printer out in the yard type of scene.
Yes.
But yeah, it's very frustrating here because I think I have the notes as we come to them. But he vaguely alludes to things, and then once again, just like the airport scene, fills you in on them later. Like, oh yeah, by the way, they tore him to shreds and burned him.
Right.
It's like the coolest thing that's happened in this book, and we sort of get a tossed off look back at it.
Meanwhile, what's that guy who was worried about your attire as you walked down the jetway that you were overdressed for the heat? What's he up to?
He's Why trying to figure out what happens when they're out of nuggets at McDonald's. He's debating Filet-O-Fish or Big and Tasty. I don't know.
So Edward sees his beloved, and he says these lines. I couldn't force my eyes away from Bella's bruised, blood-spattered face. Under the gore, her skin was paler than I'd ever seen. So even at this moment, he's got to be throwing insults at her skin, which he's been obsessed with how pale and awful, and it's paler than he's ever seen it.
Wow.
And he's described it as nearly translucent, like he can see the veins underneath it, right?
He sees the blood coursing through it, yeah. So it's like it's saran wrap at this point in time.
Yeah, I picture it as, you know, it's like slightly melted, you know, wax that barely covers the, you know, her viscera underneath. And
it's whatever holds together those bodies exhibits.
or maybe it's like a Tide Pod, you know, that sort of stretchy, melty crap that barely holding it.
But when she's crumpled against the wall, flamed by splintered mirrors, everything was red. All the terror and pain I'd been subduing since I'd first heard Alice's dread in the airport crashed into me in an unstoppable tidal wave. Which is, you know, it would have been easier to deal with if it was one of those frequently encountered, easily stoppable tidal waves.
Right, yes. Well, you know, the break wall is, if you get it big enough, I guess there is a way to stop a tidal wave.
But, sure.
we've never seen it happen in our lifetime.
Just a you can cut back the words just by a bit, and it might make this book a little shorter.
No, I want more descriptions of how tickets at airports work. Parking ticket buttons, and what is the sound a parking ticket makes as it dispenses the ticket? This is the thing we need to know.
Is it old school? Like, I'm thinking about like the thing that would shoot out transfer passes in the DC Metro, or is it more of a mod, like a ka-chick-oom, or is it a modern, like, you know, they just have a cell phone sort of chime as it dispenses?
Yeah, there's the ones that are nearly silent, which are a little alarming.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a Went to a sound studio. I think I've told you about this, where we went to the quietest room in the world.
Uh-huh.
One of the things they do is engineer things like that that don't have to make sounds that alarms people. And so they put sounds back into things that don't need them anymore. So I wonder, do they put the little zzz, like to give you a ticket? Like, that's what I remember. That's the sound they make.
Right. So, because if it's like using the new, more like the thermal printing receipts, is that what they're called? As opposed to actually like dot matrixy style, like, you retrofit that.
See, these are the things we should be talking about, not how much blood is coming out of her translucent skin. is this a superpower we know about already? Carlisle was suturing the tears in her scalp so quickly his movements were blurring again. No bleed could escape his eyes. He was able to repair the larger vessels with tiny stitches that another surgeon would not be able to duplicate under perfect conditions, even with mechanical assistance. So, did we know that he was a super? He can't do that all the time, obviously, because he's in surgery with assistants. So is hey, everybody, could you just wait outside? And then they come in 3 seconds later and like, I don't know what happened, but she's all stitched up.
A guy ran in here and was just doing this thing. He sort of is, it's sort of selfish of him to not be on the front lines of a war or tragedy if he's able to do this. And instead he's stitching up Tyler Crowley in Forks, Washington.
That is true. Yeah. Think of that. He could be on any battlefield, just like, you wouldn't even see him. There'd just be, by the time they walked up to the injured, they'd be like, wow, he's already stitched up. Don't know what happened here.
But it sort of must be like, you know, Superman, where it's like the heat of his suturing is actually what's causing them to cauterize. He doesn't even need the thread. He's just doing it so quickly that's what happens.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe. I don't know.
Huh.
But I also like this part. They said that Jasper and Emmett are all having trouble being around all this blood that spilled. And Alice is as well, but Carlisle just says, "Hold your breath," Carlisle said. "It will help." She nodded and stopped breathing as she darted forward and then back. Didn't we have just pages and pages of him describing how breathing was a performative act they did around other people just to seem normal?
Yes.
So why is she doing it when she's just around her family? And is she just that? She's that adept to being a normal person?
Look, the tickets come out and they, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, maybe the machine is one that displays a little like smiley face or something. Like those are always, I find those to be a nice touch.
It's like the you can remove your card thing now, which is a feature of modern shopping, which annoys me, is the staring at the machine as mm-hmm. you wait for it to tell you to take it out. Mm-hmm. And then some machines go, I haven't been making mistakes until now. I'm staring at this stupid thing, waiting for it to tell me. And then, but others make a pleasant chime. And I always like to compliment the people, like, whatever brand that is, could you, suggest at the retail convention that we all go with that system rather than
security? I've got a guy talking to me about the card reader. He's back again.
I went to take a tour of, because I don't have a lot of notes, I'm going to do this sidestep. I went to take a tour in Greenwich at the Cutty Sark, Greenwich, in England, where the Time Museum is, which is fascinating, worth it.
Time Museum?
Yeah, that's where, Greenwich Mean Time.
Oh, got it.
Okay. The reason is because the clock was invented, and so there's a huge museum, and it's a lovely place. But the Cutty Sark ship is also there, and you can tour that. And a very curt woman, I was going to pay for a bunch of people, and so I put my card in. She's like, "Don't pull the card out until, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, mm-hmm. okay. And then it made a noise, and so I pulled the card out, and she went, she did the full, and she threw down like papers, and she stepped back, and she looked at the crowd behind me. She's like, "Well, it's going to be a while now. Everybody just hang on." And she made like a big announcement. I was like, "Are you kidding me? Your thing told me to pull it out." She's like, "I said don't pull it out." It's like, all right.
Wow.
So, big scene at the Cutty Sark Museum because some idiot pulled his card out. Three seconds too soon.
The Cutty Sark Museum is not where they produce the liquor?
They don't produce it, but you can buy it. I don't think it's produced right there. I think I don't know where the thing is, but yeah,
that's a liquor that I only have ever had in those like chocolates you get at Christmas where they have two drops of booze in them that like it's cool to have when you're like 17.
What kind of cocktail would that be?
No, there's like chocolates that look like liquor bottles.
Oh, chocolates that have the little, yes, yeah.
A drop or two of tequila. And Cutty Sark was one of those.
It's mostly where they have like that crunchy congealed half sugar in there, right? Where the liquor kind of turns the sugar crunchy. Maybe I just get old chocolates from my relatives. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think those are regifted like fruitcakes.
Right. All right. Anyway, Belle is bleeding on the floor.
She's bleeding on the floor. She's bruised. It's a bad scene. But and you know, they're all having trouble being around so much blood. But then they realize, she says, like, you know, my hand is burning. And they realize that as they came in through the door, James pulled a Charlie and bit her finger.
I didn't even make that connection, but yeah, that's right. And we only find out kind of later that he sort of did it by accident?
Yeah, it was like he almost like did it as she was like falling or something. She brushed her finger past his teeth or something like that. Like the excuse you would give for like hitting your sister in the back of the car. Well, she just put her elbow in. I mean, she put her shoulder into my fist.
Right, and my fist was there. I told her not to move forward.
But yeah, so she's infected with his venom. It's coursing up her arm, and it's going to be. It's going to change her unless they're able to stop this. But Edward seems just baffled by how he's going to do this. And finally, Carlisle says, like, there may be a chance. And Edward says, what? I begged him. What was the chance? And it turns out that the chance is to see if you can suck the venom back out, he said, calm again. The wound is fairly clean. So the solution is to do the one thing that everyone has grown up seeing you do in movies for when you get bit by a snake, and the only association anyone has with venom.
Right. So
even
much.
Even though it's not true, right? You don't actually do that, I don't think.
I do not think that that's possible. Yeah, but it's just so commonly known that it is, you know, of course, spawned the famous jokes, you know, where someone gets bit in a, let's just say, a compromising position, and then they go and talk to the doctor. You have to suck the poison out. And then the person comes back and says, doctor says you're going to die. So,
oh boy.
So that's
right.
How...
yeah, it's widely known. It's like, you know, the toilet spinning backwards, that type of thing. Or just, you know, Rod Stewart type of thing. That sort of story. It's widely known even if it's not true.
Alanis Morissette. Right. Come on. Did it right. Yeah, so in order to figure this out, well, first of all, let's go back to the thing of her blood is everywhere. We spent the first 4,000 pages of this book talking about how he would deal with being around her blood, you know,
yep,
is as poorly encased as it is in that waxy thing she calls skin. He couldn't even stand to be around it. So we had the big, you know, we had to sit in a field for 7 hours to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And his family did.
He was going to roll around it like a dog in a dead skunk, essentially, right, is what he was worried about.
And his family, they went through no such training. They did not do boot camp. They did not lay in a field. They just inherited
trees and
right,
fish. Yeah.
Which are the things you do to get over your bloodlust. But they are now ankle deep in her blood. No one seems very concerned. They're holding their breath. Mm-hmm. And but now his thing is like, can I resist sucking all of her blood out if I... you know, try to suck the poison out. And that's supposed to be the big linchpin upon which this whole thing stands, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be gigantic drama. He even says, but !! I wanted to scream, but I'm a vampire.
Oh my God.
Which I'm glad he didn't scream that, because his dad would probably be like, yeah.
Didn't Nicolas Cage famously scream that in one of his movies?
Oh wow!
I'm a vampire. I'm a vampire. It's in one of
part
his 11-minute montage. Yes.
Yeah.
But so in order to figure out how this is going to work out, I think this is where this is. She saw my futures spinning out into 1,000 different kinds of despair on the outer edges. Yeah. On the outer edges, she even saw me doing the one imaginable thing I hadn't yet consciously considered. The thing I was sure I was too weak for. Until I saw it in her mind, I didn't realize that version even existed inside my head. Now I could see it.
Oh.
This is a very complicated system where I have never heard of someone unaware of their own thoughts.
Right.
This is not a thing.
It's the anti-Kleinian.
I believe that being aware of your own thoughts is the one is like a philosophical bedrock. Like you can't tell me I'm not aware of my own thoughts. It's like that we can start there. You know, why is there something rather than nothing? Why am I aware of my own thoughts? This right. kind of thing. But he's unaware of his own thoughts until he sees
them. Ergo sum. He rejects that.
I guess so. Until he sees things in other people's heads about himself, he isn't aware that he thinks things.
Or there are even possibilities, right? It's like physical possibilities. So he's not aware that he might be able to do something. Even though like everyone has thought about what if I could fly, what if I could, you know, shoot lasers out of my eyes, like you imagine ridiculous stuff every day.
I guess until I see it in someone else's head, why would I do it? I don't know.
So he sort of just like starts to suck, right? And it says it hit me like an explosion, a bomb detonating inside my body and mind. The first time I caught Bella's scent, I thought I'd be undone. That was a paper cut. This was a decapitation. My brain was severed from my body. But he sort of just powers through it, I guess. He takes it to the brink and just sort of like is unable to. He resists the urge to go any further, even though he's has no brain anymore.
Right. I think it continues. I had her blood on my tongue. It was probably tinting the edges of my irises red even now. It was drying into my clothes and dyeing my skin. But she could still make me laugh. The doctor said the same thing at Joan Rivers' bedside. No, she's cracking him up.
Right.
He's sucking her blood dry and she's making him laugh.
Right. Yeah, it's a good. I mean, maybe he's read the other books in the series, so he knows that there's no actual drama here. So that's why he's able to just take this pretty loosely. You know, it is pretty funny.
Yes. Meanwhile, how many feet?
The sirens are echoing from all the people that are paralyzed on the freeway.
Right. I mean, this is the worst day in Phoenix's history. Not to mention, just feet away, they're tearing apart a tracker. Right.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, are they consuming him? What do you do with the tracker when you pull him apart?
Well,
do you eat him or?
Yeah, he said
you burn the pieces.
Yeah, he said he wanted to tear them into strips. So I was imagining sort of like how you dry, you know, jerky, stuff like that. But then Emmett and Jasper go and siphon some accelerant and then they start applying it to the walls. And later it's revealed that they also applied it to the tracker and burned him, but they don't drill down on that in real time.
Yeah, the covering up, the inversion of these scenes, like the action all happens, and then the rest of the book is, oh, I forgot to tell you, this is how we burnt down the dance studio.
Yeah.
I found that absolutely hilariously absurd and
frustrating. Emmett and Jasper have an amazing, like, fun time here. They tear a guy apart. They go and siphon gas from a car, and then they burn down the studio like you're doing it for insurance money. Like, that'd be a fun day.
Yeah, they're siphoning. I like that they use accelerant. Like, yes. what accelerant are you siphoning? What is available to be siphoned? Let's run them down. What's your favorite?
They went to, there was a guy who had a napalm distribution center next to the dance studio. It wasn't doing very well, so he was considering burning it down for insurance money too.
He had it all planned, and then they siphoned out all of his accelerant, and so, like, now what am I going to use?
Damn it, Martha, there goes the retirement. I made an honest living sailing napalm to guys out of the back of this truck for 30 years, but now it's all gone.
Well, I think I'll safely drive down the freeway. That should be...
Is my beloved daughter, and what were her two daughters in the car as well? Like, oh, it's just her lying safely drugged on the side of the freeway.
Oh, thanks. Someone was so kindly to do that.
I just hope he was handsome. That's all I can hope for. I think that's where that chapter ends, is they're just splashing gasoline around this place, having a grand old time.
Of course, we should probably move on. But I just want to check in real quick with Coyote Peterson, see if he's still reading the piece. Coyote?
Give me a second. Oh my gosh.
All right.
You all right?
Oh, yeah.
What are you feeling?
Have you gotten to the... Are you following along with us?
Give me a second.
All right, well... poor guy. I feel his pain. Anyway, yeah, so chapter 27, chores?
Chores, yeah. You follow up blood with chores. Why not? I mean, that's the way the drama's trending in this one.
That's kind of how it would work out at my house, you know, when the kids were young. Blood and then chores.
Right, yeah. They'll learn. They'll learn next time.
So this entire thing, I confess, I don't have a lot of notes for this because this is just, this is staging the crime, yeah. Or not the crime,
the cover
up. Covering up.
Yeah.
And it involves, throwing blood around a hotel, right?
Yeah. So this whole thing is, it's told in a very confusing fashion that is, as we said before, the, Alice's visions, doing the pre-crime or Nicolas Cage next thing where she will, is thinking about how to cover this up. And then she'll realize something was off. Like if she wasn't wearing a watch and needed to do it, then she will go back to real time and ask Jasper for his watch. And then she will start thinking about her plan again, get to the next thing that goes awry and realize she needs to, you know, ask for a room on the second floor of the hotel instead of the first floor. So in a movie, Ocean's 11 style, next style, you could imagine this happening. Very hard to convey it in printed word.
This, I have to confess, I think I sort of understood at the end, the watch thing, the example you just gave, but that took me a couple times. And I was like, I don't have time for this. This is, I got to finish a giant epilogue about a prom. I don't have time to figure out. But it reminds me, though, of the, have you ever been on a movie set? Have you seen I'm sure it's all done in a different way now. But years ago, the continuity director would walk around with a Polaroid camera and just take snapshots of everything from scene to scene. Mm-hmm. And then would stick them on a big loop on their belt. On his or her belt, and then would chase the director down and say, "You can't shoot the scene because you didn't in this last photo here. This was sitting to the left, and
right. And they're the least three quarters full, not half full."
Yes, but. Yep, and that was their job, and everybody hated them. And they like, "I don't have time for that. We don't have time. We have to shoot. We have to go." And then pictures would be produced. Okay, but it's going to be jarring when that thing moves 4 inches to the left from this shot to that. Like, okay. And that's what that's what this is. Her going like, "We need the watch. Okay, there it is. Now we're good."
Right.
That, like you say, that is not good cinema. It's not good reading. So this is a terrible, terrible chapter.
Right. And as we've seen before, she looks at all these possibilities theoretically simultaneously, but you know, for her to then, you know, do it in real time for the sake of us being able to read along with it is frustrating.
And is Edward shutting it off? Because he seems to have open access to her brain. But is he like, as she's doing this, is he kind of like, "Look, I don't need to, stop, I don't want to hear this. I don't, just do your business."
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if he's relating it to us now or if he's sort of, because at the end he's sort of like, he's, you know, "I prepared to relive it all again in real time" or something as they actually start doing the things.
Right, yeah. So I guess he was watching it. He was walking through this whole thing with her, I guess.
Yes. I guess so. That's how he's telling it to us. But there are some funny aspects of it, I think. I mean, like you said, she goes to a hospital and heists 4 bags of blood out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere on the freeway of Arizona, like there's a mother who's weeping as the EMT pulls up to their child, and the guy reaches for his, you know, bag of blood that's going to save their life with a transfusion, and he's coming up empty because Alice has stolen the last ones of his type available or something.
Yeah, and ironically, from the car accident that Emmett caused, you know, which is a rush on all the blood in the Phoenix area is needed for this horrific accident that just took place.
Yeah, and she's splashing it around a hotel staircase and the backseat of her rental car. But at least she looks good while she's doing it. That was my main takeaway as she's sort of ruining a rental car, smashing herself through a hotel window to, you know, commit this big fraud, essentially. He continues to comment on how beautiful she is. She bewitches like the hotel employee with her perfect face, I think they say. And also talks about her as she smuggles out the blood by putting on Emmett's sweatshirt so she can she can stuff the blood into it. There was an old ad for Chi-Chi's restaurant, I remember, where a guy goes in and pumps his like his coat full of their salsa. And the point was like, now you can buy your salsa in jars at home. But that's essentially what she did with blood at this point in time.
I think we had been scheming. We'd gone to enough opening baseball games and been really been taken by the beer. The beer vendors started to get to us, and we tried to smuggle beer. I think you and I actually discussed getting one of the beer bellies that strap onto your... It's like, look, it's either warm beer ejected from a plastic thing that sits on my stomach or, $9. $11, please, right? Yeah. $11 for 12 ounces of an IPA or something.
Yeah, that became an arms race at one point in time. Like, you know, you would sort of just divide it up between people and be like, hey, you know, if Adam gets caught going through, like, you know, we'll re-divvy the beers, but like someone's got to take one for the team. At one point in time, I even like, we put them, I forget what we did. We put them in a trash can outside of a hotel and then realized that for some reason we needed to go back and haul them back out of that trash can.
Wow.
But yeah, that was no fun. But I guess we just needed one of Emmett's amazing sweatshirts.
She was swimming in that sweatshirt.
Yeah, it pooled around her tiny body, and yet, somehow, there was an air of the avant-garde about it. Alice could pull off anything.
Oh, brother.
So wow. She's essentially a woman on the cover of a romantic comedy who's spent the night and is, like, making breakfast in her boyfriend's shirt, I guess.
The boyfriend shirt, yeah, yeah. There's the old cliche about she could make a gunny sack look good or something like that. And I think Marilyn Monroe wore a burlap sack famously in like a poster or something like that. Yep, that's her.
But then also we get this too. She went to the hotel and needed to falsify a time on something, I guess, to establish, you know, when they perpetrate this fraud, when this accident occurs. And, he held out his arm, Jasper, and she took the bespoke brejeux, the fancy watch, a gift from her off his wrist. He didn't bother to wonder why. He was too used to this. The watch hung loose against her hand. She wore it like a bangle bracelet, and it looked perfect. She could start a trend. Bella is still, right, in critical condition, right? Like, she lost half of her blood and is in the back of the car. So, I mean, maybe focus on that.
She could start a trend of making incredibly expensive bespoke watches popular.
Wow, what an icon!
Yes,
I think for a while Kevin pointed it out to me. There was a ad that was in all like the airplane magazines where Leonardo DiCaprio was holding a watch, modeling a watch, but he was holding it like you would sort of brass knuckles. Do you remember those?
I posed
imitating one just because it was such a stupid ad, but I guess that's what Alice is doing.
I think that Federer has done that to Roger Federer. I think he's been a long time Rolex one, and that always annoyed me, like holding the watch. put it on your wrist, right. Precious.
But yeah, so this whole thing is to fraudulently establish an alibi for what happened to Bella. And I think for the most part, it's probably, I mean, she needs treatment at the hospital. So I guess they're going to do that. And so it's for the cops to some degree, but it's also for her parents to sort of falsify. So that Edward's still allowed to hang out with her, I guess.
Yeah, That is true, but that, again, happens kind of only after this all happens.
Right,
I read this really with half, like, I guess we'll figure out what this is supposed to all mean. I didn't really understand it. I mean, she's phoning Rosalie to tell her to rent a flatbed truck. Like, this is not, you've kind of lost me, because, again, Bella, I believe we'll probably get back to her in a second as she's bleeding out on the floor. So I'm half interested in this.
Right. It is sort of like one of those Sierra adventure games from the early 90s where, like, you know, King's Quest, you'd get to the end and, like, be trying to do something. It'd be like, oh, well, on the island of fairy tales, you forgot to phone Rosalie to ask for the flatbed truck. So the whole scheme is not going to work. You need to restart your save game and go back to it.
You might be surprised to learn that I never played one of those games.
Man, yeah. Not even, like, I guess, Day of the Tentacle?
Not even. Day of the Tentacle?
Day of the Tentacle is like the crowning achievement of that. It's like,
okay,
it's time travel, like it in a video game done very well.
All right, I want all of our listeners to write in, is Day of the Tentacle the crowning achievement? That kind of send it directly to Connor.
You never even played, like, I mean, those would have been like, they would fit on a floppy, those early King's Quest Space Quest games, so you could like trade them with your friends.
And then they were just the, are you talking about like the text adventure ones?
No, they had some of them you would walk around and then type, like, look at the gun or whatever, but then they eventually grew into point and click. But yeah, early on there was still graphics to them. The very early ones were just text, like Zork from Ready Player One. That was just text.
So the reason that you can't believe that I didn't play them was because they were on a floppy and I could trade them with friends. So why in the world wouldn't you play one? That's your reason why you think that I didn't play them.
You were probably old enough that you could have owned your own computer at that point in time. I was in, you know, elementary and middle school. So like I had to, like, I didn't have money. So I would have had to like borrow them. I mean, it seemed like something. It seemed like something you would have been into. You had Doom and stuff.
I was probably working nights at the cheese factory trying to put myself through school.
Right.
All right. Look, Bella's bleeding out here. Let's get back.
Sorry. Yes. The book. I learned it from watching the book. I learned it from watching you, Stephanie.
I learned it from you.
But yeah, so the whole she Alice rolls up like a bowling ball through a window, then goes to a car wash and pours blood all around in a car and tells the guy it was tomato juice that someone threw up. And so this master scheme works because since the guy thinks it's tomato juice barf, he's just going to breathe through his mouth as he cleans the car.
Mm.
As opposed to breathing through his nose, which would then cause him to realize that it was blood, which... you know, maybe some of his other senses aren't working if he's unable to discern that. But you get the sense this wasn't the most thought out chapter of the book, if that's sort of the scheme that this whole thing hinges on. If that's plan A.
Has that ever really worked, by the way? When you go into,
bathroom? Yeah.
Yeah, you're forced to go into the camp bathroom that, you know, it's 97 degrees and 99% humidity. Just breathe through your mouth.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay. I'm in a garden. I'm in a fragrant copse now. Exactly. Thank you so much. This is fun. All right. I think we're on to, unless you have more, three conversations.
They do sort of, the last part of this chapter, they do sort of cap it off with something that I'm like, I swear, if this was intentional, I'm going to be very unhappy. But Edward says, I blinked and tried to reorient myself. When Alice's visions were detailed like this, it was easy to lose track of what was happening in the moment. And I believe I believe my note was just in all caps, no shit.
Yeah.
So, yep. But after that, after we've lost track and sort of had to piece together that, it's time to move on to, three conversations. Chapter 28, the penultimate chapter.
Now, at this point, I saw three conversations. And it reminded me of, I don't know if this has ever happened, where you're listening to a boring speaker, an untalented speaker, and you're already looking at your watch, and you're kind of looking around for the escape, and then the speaker says, I've got 3 points to make about that, which I'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
And your heart just sinks, and you go, what? Mm-hmm. What is what? And so when I saw three conversations, I'm like, I don't want one. I don't want any conversations. I have to get through three of them, and it delivers. Mm-hmm. I actually think there's more conversations, but one of them is sort of off camera, and then the one with Carlisle and Charlie, and then they just started again a little bit later.
And to think that, you know, you would have these three conversations, like three wishes a genie was given to you, if a Rumpelstiltskin gave you three tasks, you would think, oh, well, those are the only three tasks. Chapter 29, the last chapter, has quite a few conversations as well, because Bella's in a hospital bed for all this, and all she can really do is have conversations with people.
Yeah, people come in and out. There's a lot of, I noted with humor, like how many chairs there are in the room. It's kind of like, you know, if you actually are attending to someone who's in the hospital for a long time, like, oh boy, the aunts and uncles are coming later. I wonder if I can borrow chairs. Mm-hmm. That was actually my concern reading it. Like, oh, is there going to be enough for the many conversations of people coming in and out.
Yeah, I think it's just, the TARDIS. It can accommodate whatever you need to in the moment, and it's going to have ample space and stuff for people to take naps or, sit and chat with her.
But the first conversation, so she's in the hospital. She's going to be okay. By the way, did you settle on the other doctor's name? Did you have a pronunciation in your head?
I did out loud the first time I read it, just so I wouldn't be caught off guard here. And I don't appreciate you putting me on the spot here, but I'll give it a shot.
Well, I would go first.
Okay.
Sadaranagani?
Yeah, I think that's very correct. Dr. Sadaranagani. I don't know why that... It was hard after you just said it perfectly, but...
I mean, it took me a while. I had to... It's like, is that second pronunciation? Okay, so it's not Sadarangani.
Yep.
I added a syllable.
Okay. They just throw that at you. That's Carlisle's doctor buddy who is in Arizona, who they go way back and stuff, but they go a little too far back because Dr. Sadarangani voices surprise at Carlisle's unchanged appearance and his silent suspicions that despite Carlisle's claims that the cool, humid air of the Pacific Northwest was a natural fountain of youth, Carlisle had been experimenting in plastics. So this is something that even the kids at school are thinking. Like Mike Newton is like, I bet he does plastic surgery on his kids. So like their airtight preventing everyone from learning where vampires scheme may just have some glaring holes in it if everywhere they go people are like, what the hell are they doing to themselves?
Well, this also has to be a thing that's going to come up. First of all, he knows that he's going to run into Sadarangani, right?
Yeah.
But there are many other times in his life after you've lived, laughed, and loved it as long as Carlisle has, you're going to run into people, let's say, at the airport, at the gate, waiting to fly to Phoenix.
Right.
Is it Carlisle? You look like you when I knew you 67 years ago. Right. You know?
Oh, crap. I thought I had my hands tucked under my sleeves. I thought that was going to be right. my escape valve here.
So yeah, it's hardly airtight, but Sadarangani swallows his objections, and they go around and they start their work, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess they weren't necessarily objections as they were suspicions, and you know, the him saying that the cool air of the Pacific Northwest prevents you from aging is something that I would be like, well, I'm going to question my doctor's judgment if that's something that he actually believes.
And then the puzzling wrap-up to it, the end of this hand wave, he was sanguine enough about Bella's case to beg Carlisle to look in on a few of his as-yet-undiagnosed patients. So it's sort of like, look, I know he's given me a bunch of garbage here. There's something going on. He's obviously experimenting on his own face. But, hey, could you come in and look on a few of my other cases?
Yeah, man, I'm bushed. I haven't, like, I took a long lunch, so I haven't got around to diagnosing some of these future corpses. But thank God you showed up with this nearly dead girl.
Yeah. It's like, Bela Lugosi in one of our terrible movies, just going like, I don't know, there's something about this guy. But, hey, come and look at my daughter, will you?
Yes, exactly. As he's, literally like has his widow's peak and fangs for Dracula.
Yes. So thus begins the conversations. Carlisle calls up Charlie.
Yep, he calls Charlie, and they just sort of meet out the cover story in more frustrating fashion.
And this was puzzling to me. So Charlie, the last time he saw her, she was storming out saying, don't ever talk to me again, Edward.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And she also said something about, like, you know, I don't want to get stuck here like Mom did, which, like, broke his heart to the extent that it could break, you know, if it wasn't having a bad fishing day or something.
And then, but the next confusing thing for me is, I don't think she is meeting out the information of what the cover story is until later, right?
Yes. Yeah,
so this is like, so Charlie gets a phone call, hey, your daughter's in the hospital. She's in severe. She's severely injured.
Mm.
And he's like joking with him and stuff.
Yes.
He's like, well, I'm glad you're there with her. I hope everything works out. Yep, I hope so too, Charlie. I'm, you know, Is Edward there? Yeah, he is. Oh, he seems like a decent chap. Like, I didn't understand what's going on. Why is he not immediately flying to Phoenix?
Well, so they hand wave that around, but he says they hand wave that because he says that's not the problem. He sighs. You know, we don't get a lot of serious crime up here, but that nasty assault case from last summer is finally going to trial, and if I'm not here to testify, it would only help the defense. So I took a long time looking at that, and then I was like, "Have we heard of this?" And then I was like, "Is it the Port Angeles guy?"
Yeah, it has to be.
Okay, yeah. That's how they sort of. They say that he can't come there, but you know, you can get from, I'm sure that's a 3-hour flight. You could probably even do that in a day if it was important to you. But as we learn in these next final two chapters, the parents are just sort of chill about the whole thing.
Indeed they are. Yeah.
But so he says, he sounds bewildered when they call, and he says, what even happened? 1 minute, everything is normal. And then Bella is shrieking about liking your boy and that being a problem. And then she's running out in the middle of the night. Carlisle laughed again. Do you remember the first time you fell in love? Charlie was quiet for a minute. Yeah, I do. Hard stuff to forget. So I just imagined him, you know, the image of a popping frog lure flashing through his mind. Like,
zzz, splash.
Four pack of Rainier tall boys.
Hooked to his belt loop. But what she's doing here as the author is not telling us the information about what crime they staged or what accident they staged. She's being cagey about it. And the fact that it didn't come up is like infuriating. Why aren't they talking about what's going on?
I'm not sure. And I only really sort of like pieced it together, you know, after it was done, but a lot of people sent this in as a dumb sentence. I'll get ahead of it. But, Charlie says, hey, if you weren't there, she could have fallen through a window anywhere.
Yeah.
So that's his sort of like, you know, that's his like, you're going to get that type of thing for his daughter falling down the stairs and falling through a window at a motel room.
Yeah, she wouldn't have even been in that stairwell in the first place.
Right.
So that's all you get of that. As a father, I would have more questions. I don't know.
Right. Deeply suspicious of the guy she was, fighting with and then has this tragic accent who happens to be there type of thing. But I think they meet out the cover story of why they're even there in the first place later, why the Cullens are there.
Yes, they do. That all happens off. That happens later. And we're supposed to believe that Charlie's just like, well, yep, she's clumsy, and I've got to get to court tomorrow, and then there's fishing at 6, so please, Mr. Probable Vampire, stay with my daughter, and I thank you for it.
But it's also a deeply weird thing to sort of think and accept as a, almost an inevitability about your daughter is that she's going to fall through a window at some point in time.
So that infuriated me that entire trait of her clumsiness is so pronounced that he heard it over the phone when he was calling her via sat phone across the country and she was coming across the room. I heard her like being a clumsy person who could probably fall through a window at some point. That's how clumsy she was. That's what it's all based on, was for this moment.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Terrible, terrible.
But then what else? I guess Bella's mom shows up. Is that the next thing that happens?
Yep, that's conversation number 2.
Mm-hmm. And guess what? Bella's mom, I guess she and Bella would often be mistaken for sisters.
Oh, yeah.
So she's got the she's incredibly in shape and hot, even though she spends all her time watching back-to-back viewings of Say Anything.
Do we get any indication of her hands?
Oh, I don't think so.
Finger length or anything?
Yeah, she doesn't spend too much time fretting, which would be the ideal time to introduce her long fingers, you know, templing and twiddling or something. But no, alas.
Renee's physical voice was perfectly normal, similar to, but a little higher pitched than Bella's own. What is he writing for, like Penthouse Forum or something?
Right.
Her mental voice, however, was piercing. Well, you know, shut her down there, buddy. You don't have to listen to my mental voice. Right. So you have a different mental voice, and it's your fault if you have, like, It's up to you? Could you modulate? Could he go up to her and say, hey, you know, can I give you a few pointers on your mental voice? Because for those of us who can hear it, it's quite strong. And here's a way you can fix that.
It's also very hard to convey in print. It would have been just as annoying if he had sort of used the John Irving, Owen Meany, all caps type of thing. But he sort of makes it seem like it's a genetic thing. And that's, you know, it's related to why he can't read Bella's thoughts, is that she has this strong, piercing mental voice. So I guess it's the opposite of that.
Yeah. And then he gets into her blood. It's the same.
It also smells sweet like Bella's. And Bella's, he resents because the transfused blood is staining her natural beautiful blood, and he sort of is resentful of this. It's like they hung up one of those pine tree windshield air fresheners.
Yeah, it's, I think, one of the first things he brings up when she comes out of her, you know, induced coma or whatever. Like, hey, what the hell, man? You got new blood.
Right.
Did not like the smell of that. You're right. Gross. But yeah, hers is, Renee's was too sweet, almost cloying. It was an interesting, if not entirely appealing, fragrance. And, you know, hey, nobody asked you to sniff my blood, you freak, you creep. Yeah, it is. Or to listen to my... It's like the, I guess, a peeping Tom complaining, you know?
Right.
She would...
she's wearing that underwear tonight.
Right.
Doesn't do much for her.
Yeah, I didn't. Nobody asked you, man.
Yeah, it's sort of like the internet commenters, you know, on a forum, you know, to a picture of Megan Fox. Yeah, 2 out of 10. Like,
right. I'd do her a favor. Oh, okay. All right.
But she has the same sort of reaction. I mean, to use Stephanie Meyer's word, sanguine about the fate that has befallen her daughter. Because when the nurse says what happens, do you want to hear about the accent? Edward says that. No, I just said that to the nurse. Bella found out, fell down some stairs. It's not that unusual. It was amazing how easily both of her parents accepted the story. But the window was unfortunate, her mom continued. So, one, the story is fell down some stairs, which is the you know, that's the go-to excuse for when something has, you know, abusive has happened to you. Two, parents of teenagers, just known for accepting the outrageous stories that their teenagers are presenting them without a second thought. It doesn't, I don't think that's how it went for me when I was trying to make excuses and lies to my parents.
And also, no questions about... What kind of structure has a window at the bottom of a stairwell that allows a 102-pound girl to crash through it? Are you aware of any? This is not a feature of anything that I've... I mean, windows and stairwells, notoriously tempered glass of several panes and thicknesses, right?
Right. And, you know, I was trying to think of, like, is it like a whole... You know, like an office building where it's like all made out of glass type of thing. But those seem like it'd be wildly inefficient in the parched sun hellscape of Phoenix to expose that much of your interior to the sun's piercing rays.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of crap you'd expect from Seville, but not not Phoenix. Put some tint on those windows or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this is this obviously just defies all belief that both parents are just kind of like, well, yep, I told her someday she'd get in trouble.
Right. Yeah, I personally thought it like a zeppelin was going to crash on her as she was, you know, riding her bike into a shark's mouth. But like, I mean, you know, that's going to happen to her one of these days.
Yeah, I'm frankly surprised she didn't trip and fall into a stump grinder. That's why I'm so... This is actually a good out. This is the best outcome we could have hoped for.
Right. Beep, beep, beep. But so then we get... Alice sort of brings in a video camera.
Yeah, the whole video thing, the way that she meted out this information, entirely frustrating as well. Kept talking about that. Because that was set up by he's in a room and he's got his VHS machine or whatever.
Yeah, that was a sight they saw back when they were chasing him like across Alaska before he jumped in the plane. But he sort of films himself. He's doing a James Bond villain sort of like, you know, talking to his victim and taunting Edward at the same time. But he's essentially... set up a weird system using old VHS home movies to lure Bella to the dance studio, which is a very basic Home Alone technique, essentially. Like, that's how he orders pizzas and tricks the wet bandits by using his patented talk boy to pretend like his parents are home or something.
Oh, see, I don't think that I got that he was, I thought that he was, as a tracker, that he just had the ability to say, because isn't it that she says, like, he does the mom's voice, or he has, like, Bella, I'm here, Bella.
Yeah, but I think that was him, like, playing, you know, her mom, you know, like, coming in the door with a new camera to, like, surprise her. Bella, I'm here. And then fast forward. Bella, come over here to the dance studio. Like, you know, Bella, I need help type of thing.
Okay, I did not get that.
Well, it's because it's really stupid. So that's...
Okay. Did she say Bella, please come meet me at the dance studio? Wasn't it that the tracker made her think that he had her mom?
Yeah, so she must have recorded that, I mean, during the days of, you know, just a parent, like, recording everything that you're obviously never going to watch again. You just captured her voice saying a lot of things.
Okay. I have a question for our listeners. It's this little thing. It's during the conversation with Renee. This is her out loud voice, so it's okay. I'm not going to do an impression of her. Her out loud voice is normal, yeah.
Okay, phew.
It's fine, Renee said out loud. Oh, God, says it right there. I'd like to hear about the accident, if it's okay. We'll be very quiet. And then Edward says, I wanted to laugh at that. I don't get that. What does that mean?
Because he's been hearing her loud, normal voice, and that's ironic? I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's not clear to me why that should be funny.
Okay. All right. Well, we know he's a cut-up.
Yeah, he has dark humor.
Dark humor. All right. Well, I just didn't get that. And there's a lot of things I don't get. I didn't even know he was using VHS tapes to... I thought he was watching Uncle Buck while he waited for her to show up. So I was completely off. Off base.
I think that also might be something that I just vaguely remembered from the movie that I'm able to interpret. But who knows? But yeah, he essentially does I said this was a sentence we did not need at page 609 of this book. He began another monologue. We got to cut to the chase at this point in time. But he says, he launches into something that's like glossed over, but he says he only had one victim that ever escaped him. And it turns out that victim was Alice.
Yeah.
And they sort of just like move on from that. They toss that into the interesting backstory pile to inspire fan theories and fiction for the next two decades.
That I could you have cared less about that? I didn't. I was trying to remember, what is her backstory? Like, who cares? I don't know. I guess he and they crossed paths before and he recognized her playing baseball.
Yep. When they told everyone's backstory, you know, Emmett got attacked by a bear, et cetera. They were just, but Alice, nobody knew. And I was like, well, you know, then you should make a book about that as opposed to this, the story that everyone knows.
Right.
And I guess now they're sort of just fleshing that out a bit more.
Here's a sentence that annoyed me, and I think she's really going for a Hall of Mirrors at the end of a good movie kind of thing here, but mm-hmm. Very annoying. Eventually, Alice walked toward the lens. A spasm of agony crossed her features, and I knew she was seeing a vision of the recording, and also, I was sure, a vision of me watching it now. She picked up the camera, and the screen went dark.
Mm-hmm.
So we're pointing mirrors at mirrors now and visions of the futures at visions of futures, right?
Yeah.
And we're supposed to go, whoa. But that just made me, again, I couldn't throw my computer across the room. But
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, a couple being like, you say it first. Like, you say it first. But it's her doing that while she's thinking about him watching the video of her thinking about him watching the video. Yep. And then, yes, I think that he sort of like he ends this chapter ends with him, you know, balled up in the on the floor praying that something will happen. But. There was no God that I belonged to. Instead, I prayed to her God. So again, we get into the deeper philosophical questions of his universe, but I think it's best just skirted over with the, with the appropriate amount of respect that this deserves, which is none.
It's amazing. I had much to say about that, but it is so, yeah, we'll leave it at that. I do want to point out that he is in, so he goes to the chapel to watch the videotape of his girlfriend being tortured.
Mm-hmm.
And then the music comes on, and it was the adagio from Rachmaninoff's Second Piano Concerto.
Okay, yeah, I saw that, and I thought you would have more information about that than I did.
It would be the thing where then the assistant priest who was playing it would accidentally, whoops, I hit the wrong button. I obviously was going for some Handel or Bach there. I didn't want to play Rachmaninoff's Second Piano.
Oh, in the chapel?
Yes. That would be a very, it's just not impossible, just very odd choice. Mm-hmm. Very, very strange. That it came, he said it came on an automatic timer or something. But anyway, very, very strange, and no reason to make that sort of unforced error of that just wouldn't be a song that would be playing there.
Right. Cardi B comes on over the thing that says, whoa, the priest is using this for something very inappropriate in the off hours.
Yes. All right. So chapter 29.
My God. Yeah, there's a lot to cover. This is. I think this begins where Bella regains her consciousness. This is sort of like where this this picks up.
I think so. Yeah. This is again of the three conversations. This is now 5, 6, 7, 8. I don't know where we are in conversations.
but this conversation, she does. You know, she's been in a coma for a couple days at this point in time. But she quickly starts cracking jokes as soon as she emerges out of it. And you know, she says the cover story was that she fell down the stairs, and then you have to admit it could happen. And then at some point in time, I think maybe they kiss, and he grimaces, and she says, "Don't I taste as good as I smell?" And she grinned at her own joke. So it's good that she's able to do that, as she's probably still regaining sensation in some of her extremities.
You have 16 pins in your left leg alone. How you're making these jokes, I don't know.
Don't I taste as good as I smell? Bella, you will never walk again.
Every time the barometric pressure moves one half a bar either way, you'll be in severe agony.
But it's also not limited to her. Her mom comes back from this, and so this is maybe Edward and Bella chat for a couple minutes, but then she walks in, and so Bella's maybe been conscious for 7 or 8 minutes, and her mom says, "You're lucky Dr. Cullen was there. He's such a nice man. Very young, though. And he looks more like a model than a doctor." Like, I'm just imagining my parents would still be weeping and saying, you know, "I love you," and how glad they are and how lucky I am, as opposed to being like, "Yeah, man, if I wasn't dating a AA baseball player, I'd be in his pants before you could even get him off a shift." Hey.
Oh, she is digging the Cullen. She has a bunch of comments, and the daughter, she likes the daughter. She likes them all.
Yeah, she comments about how handsome Edward is as well.
Yeah, very good looking. Oh, when she wakes up, though, she does, you know, I was doing the blush count. She blushes again, but there's quite a twist on this one. A light blush was coloring her good cheek. So her other cheek was like smashed into unrecognizable pulp, so it couldn't be bothered to blush at this time.
Yeah, really. I'm giving it my best, but this has never happened before to me as a cheek.
But it does come back later, so fear not.
So her mom again, you know, talks about how hot Mr. Cullen is, and then quickly is like, "But enough about you, Bella. Phil got some great news."
Yes.
Which, you know, last we left off Phil, he was maybe going to sign with the Tucson Sidewinders or something like that. But he has gotten some great news. He is signed by the Jacksonville Suns. They are the AA equivalent team for the Miami Marlins. And now they're currently, they rebranded a year or two ago. They are now the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp in one of those they realize that absurd minor league teams would sell a lot more merchandise, so they now have a much more comical name.
Is that true?
What?
That they did that?
Oh, yeah. I knew the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. I didn't realize they used to be named the Suns.
Wow. So is that just an arms race with the with those teams to come up with more absurd?
Oh, yeah. You know, you're going to
like
have the
mud skippers and
the Rumble Ponies. Yeah, exactly. The Yard Goats.
Okay. All right. Yeah,
but she says that, you know, you can move with us and live there now. And part of what she offers her for this arrangement is that Phil will be able to be around so much more now. We've talked about it a lot. And what I'm going to do is trade off on the away games, half the time with you, half the time with him. To, just to clarify here, Phil is signed with the AA baseball team.
Yes.
And I looked it up, probably earning around $7,500 per baseball season. So maybe $300 a week.
Right.
And just, this is not an arrangement where your girlfriend is traveling with you to the other, you know, romantic cities of the AA circuit.
I assume, in fact, that it's either strongly discouraged or just prohibited flat out.
Yeah, it is absurd. So, I mean, you would just have a guy just like, you know, his teammate being like, you know, hey Phil, I'm glad I got you alone on the back of the bus. Renee is following the bus in her beat up sedan. I noticed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's.
Yeah, she comes to every away game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why is she traveling with the team? Like we're sleeping four to a motel room here.
Yeah, I got it. I guess I haven't tallied the budget on this, so let me look that up. Wow, yeah. Now that you mention, I'm buying a separate hotel room for her every time she comes.
Well, you're earning $225 a week, and part of that has to go to food. I mean, the team has a, you know, they service peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You're a professional athlete. You've got to keep up nutrition.
Well, she has a job. Oh, wait, no. She does not have a job.
No, you said she's waiting on being a potential substitute teacher, but
yeah.
She hasn't. So, well,
she has a line on it. Remember that when I told you I was super excited that there was an assistant coach told me that maybe there would be an opening for a shortstop.
Mm-hmm. Out in Arizona, the Sidewinders.
Yes, that did not pan out, as you well know.
Okay.
But that kept us going for quite a while.
The potential job
lifted our spirits.
Now, Phil, I am concerned because that was a low level minor league baseball job that you did not get.
Right,
you were not qualified for that job, and so.
Right, but the day that happened, that he told me, we called everyone we knew, called Bella. You know Bella, her daughter.
Yeah, I do know, because like you're when you couldn't afford the hotel room and your girlfriend had to sleep in the room with four of your fellow teammates, she did have a conversation with her daughter in the middle of the night, and no one could sleep, and we got hammered by the Montgomery biscuits the next day.
That is true, but I don't see a line of causation through those two events. I understand what you're saying, but I don't see it.
So yeah, it's not the most well thought out plan that Bella's mom is presenting to this lifestyle that her boyfriend is adopting.
Did she call it great news? I have great news, or I have.
Yeah, she says. Yeah, I think it must be great news. I did not copy it, but that's. I think she's in her 30s too. Like, you know, a baseball player is pretty much widely considered to be washed up by 34. Like, if there's a rookie who has, you know, been playing in the minor leagues for a decade and shows up to get his token, you know, in major league debut because someone's injured, it's like, yeah, he played 1,200 minor league games, and obviously nothing good is going to happen here, but you got to admire his commitment.
Phil is, he's the natural. He comes back after an undisclosed, God, I love baseball, says Phil as he plays for the jumbo shrimps.
Yeah. We rebranded Phil, and you are going to have to pay for the new uniforms. It's not, there is no budget to supply the players with those. You cannot take the field in the Suns cap. It's either buy the new one or don't suit up.
Hang on. Let me call my girlfriend. Honey, great news. We're financially ruined even more than we are right now. This struck me as funny. So this is what her mom reports to her. As she lies there, broken, shattered in every way. If you could see an X-ray of her, it would look like, you know, that how they've X-rayed the plaster casts of the people at Pompeii.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bag of bone. There's no correlation between. That's what she would look like. And this is what her mom proposes to her, or says to her. Someone broke into the dance studio around the corner from the house and burned it to the ground. There's nothing left at all. And they left a stolen car right out in front. Do you remember when you used to dance there, honey? And then Edward follows it. He's like, oh, no. We weren't the only ones who had stolen cars. The trackers had actually been parked around the south side of the dance studio. So he knows it was on the south side. We hadn't known to clean up his crimes as well as our own. And it was helpful to our alibis, as that car had been boosted a day before we'd arrived in Phoenix. So he hadn't thought to do it, but then he quickly realizes it's a good thing.
Right.
Anyway.
No one cared about it. That was not the plot hole we were worried about.
Is there something a little silly about James the Tracker, who, what is he, 300, 400, 500 years old? Boosting cars and kicking around a high school girl at her old dance studio. And then the coven, the hated other coven, burns the thing to the ground. The little girl's ballet studio to the ground, but forgets to take care of his boosted car. It's like, what are we into here? Are we really creatures of the undead, or are we into kind of a weird, like... We're the those guys who own the tanning studio who started drugging Alex Rodriguez. Just right. A bunch of dirt balls.
Yes, exactly. Now it's more about just the thrill we're getting out of it at this point in time.
That's what these vampires are. They're just dirt bags. They're like burning down dance studios.
She was dancing there probably as like a, you know, when you're every, my sister took ballet at 5 or something and obviously was never going anywhere with it, but you just put on a tutu and give a recital. And
right.
Lauren did that too. So I think, you know, it's not even a serious studio. Oh, well.
Yeah. So what happens next?
Well, the mom just like says, like, does she not want to leave because of Edward? And she's like, you know, I like him. And they're having this conversation, but she very quickly realizes that Phil is due to call soon. You know, no doubt annoying his 4 other roommates in the Super 6 motel. And that she excuses herself so that she can go and find out how they did against the, you know, the Biloxi Shuckers. It boggled the mind that she was like distracted. She, you know, in that little bit, we talked about it, but she is... very nervous that she might not be able there to interview for a long-term substitute teaching job at an elementary school. So she's just, that's what she's concerned about. It's insane.
What is their combined income? Can we run that down? Is that, so you said his is $7,500 a year?
In last year, minor league baseball players earned $8,500. And it's been the subject of like congressional hearings because they're so undercompensated by the billion-dollar enterprise that is major league baseball. So it's like notably bad.
And then waiting for a substitute teacher job. So is she on...
I hear that pays great.
is she on unemployment?
And then it says that Bella was in the hospital for 6 more days. So I think she was probably in there for 8 or 9. And I just was like, I mean, I don't think that the waiting for substitute teachers insurance is covering this. And I guess the small town police chief's policy is stepping up here.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if he was smart, he got her on the jumbo shrimps insurance right at the time that was open enrollment. I don't know.
Yeah, it's quite the question. But I guess the Cullens are able to, you know, finance all of that with their... with the stock they're going to buy in these future streaming services that Alice is seeing.
Okay, so she goes to take the phone call, and then the long, boring conversation that begins that in the movies is the most annoying thing, the change me thing.
Oh, this was 9 pages here, 9 print pages, which I'm guessing is probably over 10,000 words of them. Yeah, rehashing the hits of, do you love me? Will you change me? I can't. I can't stay with you, but you have to, etc.
Yeah. And him then tracking her heartbeat the whole time. Now her heart's pounding, and now she has the machine on it, and then, oh, I better back that down. Mm-hmm. Infuriating.
But yeah, it says like she's seen herself in Alice's vision. She's like, I'm betting on Alice, like type of thing. And this, you know, they sort of drill down on that aspect of it. And she also gives the revolting, I can't always be Lois Lane, she warned me. I want to be Superman too. Well, maybe then you should like live your life in a way that when your parents get told you fell through a window, they don't be like, yeah, that's going to happen. <'Cause> I don't think that it's a characteristic of Superman doing that too often.
Yeah. So then it ends with him leaving the room and she says, I'm betting on Alice, meaning that Alice's vision is correct. Even though he correctly points out that a lot of her visions are not correct. It's like baked in the cake of her seeing visions.
Yep, we sort of did a whole chapter, as I recall, not two chapters ago, where it was based on her incorrect visions and then correcting them.
Right. But that leaves us inevitably and inexorably towards the epilogue, which is...
titled An Occasion.
I think technically unreadable. Yes. I guess my eyes comprehended, my brain was able, the whole system was able to take in certain concepts, but to actually... read and enjoy it, I think is impossible. Technically impossible.
Yeah, technically unreadable and also preposterous when we discover some of the things that occur in this chapter.
All right, kick it off.
So mom leaves a couple days before Bella's even discharged from the hospital to go interview for her job. Hopefully she gets it. That would be really great. But then we get this weird little thing. I guess some of the other Cullens have gone home. Bella was on the phone with Charlie often. He was beginning to be angry. After all, none of this would have happened if not for me. His burgeoning friendship with Alice confused the issue for him. But I was sure what I would read in his quiet brain upon my return. So I'm not sure what's happening here. I don't know what his burgeoning friendship with Alice is like. Like they're doing a little just like buddy comedy or a Tuesdays with Maury thing happening here.
I can't even recall that being in the movie at all, so I don't even know what they're hinting at there.
And they've just talked, they spent the whole Ocean's 11 chapter talking about how hot and fashion icon Alice was. So is Charlie just sort of like, you know, horning it up over her as she's, you know, keeping him company, looking like a fashion icon with her bangles?
And wearing her, yeah, her her husband's, I guess. Are they married? Yeah, they're married.
Right.
The watch.
Yeah. Oh, Jasper, yeah.
Jasper, right, yeah. Wearing watch.
They do get her home, and then, you know, Alice takes over as nurse and lady-in-waiting. Bella was embarrassed that she needed someone to help her with her most basic and intimate needs, but was glad that someone was Alice. So we established which vampire was on wiping duty. That was a very important thing to get out in the final 20 pages of the book.
What was the thing that you, the wiping aid, the bathroom buddy,
oh, yeah,
I think?
Yes, exactly.
So she needed a bathroom buddy, and that was Alice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Alice has existed for 200 years, and this is how she ends up. But it does put Bella's constant request to change me in a different context.
Yes, of course.
But then they go back to school and he's pushing her around in a wheelchair at first and shooting glares at anyone who stares at her, and they sort of like the rumor spreads about her falling through a window is spread by the other characters like Jessica, who has of course been forgotten at this point in time, like the Anna Kendrick character.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the news that Alice is who loves a makeover is performing a makeover on her to get her ready for prom.
Which she does not think she's going to prom, but that's the that's the last couple pages of the book, the misunderstanding about where exactly they're going.
It's incredible. I mean, I can only speak from my own experience, but prom has I feel like it is an all-encompassing thing as you approach it your senior year. There's like bake sales to raise money for it, and you're renting limos and tuxedos, and you're asking someone a couple weeks in advance. So it's like it's a hard thing to really sort of be unaware of, I would say.
And was it not mentioned 400 times in the earlier part of the book, right?
Yeah,
all the plots are hinging on it. Boys were all over her.
Yeah, Edward did that one thing to get someone, like he set someone else up, you know, and that was his main like good deed he had done in between envisioning murdering everybody.
Right, he got, was it Emmett to pretend they're... He had a fake convert. They had like a, you know,
yep,
the worst
yep
sitcom conversation in the world to trick yeah someone into asking some, anyway.
But so yeah, they, Bella is, my only thing could be that she's doing one of those things, the Loathsome thing of people being like, oh, is there some sort of sports thing happening today on the day of the Super Bowl? Being like, you know, okay, like it's yes. pretty hard to miss this happening. Like, but and this is the whole reason that he's like making it happen is because he had this tortured future vision of her telling her children about going to the prom. Like, he wants her to have a normal existence because he knows he doesn't want to be condemn her to the life with him. So he's envisioning her being able to tell her kids she went to the prom.
Yes. Yeah. And he has sort of two versions of that that play in his mind, which also confused me. But yes, that's it, is that he has to do this. And he, in fact, enlists the entire family so that when she has children and they say, Mommy, did you go to prom? And then they promptly forget all about it, the kids, and they go back to eating macaroni and cheese and never yeah. think of it again. And she says, why, yes. She goes into a dream state, and they're already out the door hitting each other with sticks. But that's his entire reason for enlisting his whole family to do this.
Right.
To put themselves at risk again. But, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but it also provokes one of the most, you know, 10 pages left in the book at this point in time, one of the most jarring details I've ever seen wedged in, and I alluded to it earlier, but it says, one day when they were young adolescents, younger than Bella was now, perhaps prompted by a teenage rom-com on TV, and this is a parenthetical, though Alice had told me that the consumption of media would change quite a bit in the next decade, she was waiting for certain companies to form so she could invest in them. One of the children would ask Bella what her high school prom was like. So that's page 652, probably, of this tome. And they just toss in an aside that acknowledges that the existence of streaming media platforms is going to disrupt the entertainment industry.
And that that is how she's going to... I mean, aren't there a million ways to do it? Like investing in, I assume over the years, investing in silver before the crash. And sure. You know, like, yeah. But streaming services, that's how she's going to make it. And is that how the family does it? Like, what? I guess they had to have gone into this, right? Do they have like boxes of gold?
Yeah, they said something about, they had some sort of like, you know, insider trading going on, or just a keen eye towards the stock market. Although, you know, if they've been around for centuries, whatever they have is going to be much more valuable than what it was. So like, just by continuing to exist, you're probably going to get a decent return on whatever your money you're stashing away.
Right, like he could go to, Antiques Roadshow with the lantern that he used to use when he was young and just be like, I need to sell this. Oh, okay, that's $100,000.
It would be great if, Carlisle just kept ignoring Alice and it was just like, you know, blew it all on pets.com and flus and stuff like that. Just please, like, look at the thing. No, it's fun for me. I like the challenge.
All right. So then we get to this is the big turning point. This is going to end the book, is that she does not understand that he's taking her to prom.
Yeah. She comes down the stairs, she's all that makeover looking hot, but also wearing a stiletto heel, on one foot and a full leg cast on the other one, which seems ill thought out when the whole cover story about her falling through a window is what allowed this whole thing to take place.
Yeah, there's no way she is allowed stiletto. I mean, stiletto?
Just being off balance, putting two on would be tricky. Having one and then a cast seems like you're putting Mr. Magoo on roller skates and then making him ride a unicycle.
Yes, she can't walk on flats, and yes, she has a stiletto. So,
And then Edward starts driving her to the prom, and she's not sure where they're going at this point in time. And then we get a detail that I was found very hilarious, which is that Tyler Crowley shows up with a bouquet in a tux and seems to think he's taking Bella to prom. And Edward gets on the phone with him and says, I'm sorry if there's been some kind of miscommunication, but Bella is unavailable tonight. Oh, he responded.
I'm not sure what
his plan was.
What does Charlie say to lead into it? He's like, hey, would you take this call? Like, he didn't know what to do.
He says, I'm sorry to disturb your evening, but I wasn't quite sure. See, Tyler Crowley just showed up here in a tux, and he seems to think he's taking Bella to prom.
I mean, this is a guy who, how many dead bodies has he witnessed over his life? How many?
Charlie or Edward?
Charlie.
Oh, yeah.
How many people has he had to... tell them that, you know, we just I came upon the scene of an accident. He's unaware of how to deal with a kid who shows up when he's taking his dog. What? Get out of here. No, she left already. Good. She's the hell out of here.
He just does the slow reach for the shotgun and
type of thing. Like, he just racks his 8-10 and he's out of there. But so instead he calls up and hopes that Edward can clear it up. It just seemed a really odd move for the sheriff to do.
But then again, he has just watched his daughter leave with someone in a stiletto heel. He's pinned a corsage to her, and she seems to be unaware that she's going to prom in that situation. So maybe it's something that runs in the family.
Oh, yeah. And I guess I never thought of the explanation that later she thought that, you know, this was going to be the changing ceremony or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she was allowing it to happen in front of her father.
Yeah,
so that got home as an undead creature, I don't know.
Right, she was going to be just like, you know, blood, and he was going to be like, "How'd that go, honey?" but then we have this reaction. "You're taking me to prom?" she shouted. She really hadn't known. I didn't know what to do with that. What else could we be doing in formal attire in Forks tonight? Honestly, Bella, what did you think you were doing? She scrubbed at the tears falling down her cheeks, her face horrified. She looked like I just told her I'd murdered all her friends and she was next. So I was just like, you know, Edward's got to be like, okay, we are turning around and going straight back to the hospital. The undiagnosed head injury is clearly not healed. Like, this is, the emotions are wildly unstable. We've got to get this treated.
It's also fairly ironic that he mentions, like, murdering all of her friends and whatnot. It's like, yeah, you have thought that many times, Nero.
Right, yes.
You actually have.
She jokes about it within seconds of them walking in the door to prom. She says, do you want me to bolt the door so you can massacre the unsuspecting townfolk, she whispered.
God.
The idea of a mass murder sounded more appealing to her than the reality of prom. And that's a disturbing moment.
Yes.
But also at the prom, we got this moment, which reminded me of and several of our readers about the opening moments of Ready Player One. It says, tonight, Rosalie, Emmett, Jasper, and Alice were really dancing. They melded 100 styles from other decades into new creations that could belong to any time at all. No. Which just was their the wide variety of 80s dance moves that was being exhibited in the Oasis as Ready Player One kicked into gear.
Oh, that's right.
So they're melding decades of dance styles together all in one. So they're merging the Charleston with a Dirty South twerk.
The evolution of dance, I guess.
I guess so. Yeah.
Well, then
what else?
Well, I don't have much, because then it just sort of plays out like the movie. She meets Jacob. I guess my other thing is that the boy had grown several inches since the last time I'd seen him.
Right.
Is that a reference to him being a werewolf, or is it just like, how long has it been?
That's a good question. How long has this been? 8 weeks?
Several inches. And he didn't look like a boy anymore. As a child is when he had seen him.
Yeah, I guess when they met her at her house, and he's like, "Oh, I'm never going to be old enough for her." As he's like licking his big lollipop or something, and now he's just a full grown man. A couple weeks later.
Yep, it's the prom, but his shirt is already off, and his chest is waxed.
But yeah, Jacob's dad paid him $20 if he would go to the prom and ask her to break up with Edward, which, you know, just hearing that sentence out loud, that's very funny.
Yes.
I want to do that at some point in time to a high school kid. Hey, I'll give you $20 if you go to a prom and ask someone to break up with their boyfriend. And then he ends it also saying, he tells her, "We'll be watching." And Jacob still is unsure of why he's there, and he doesn't understand he's a werewolf, so...
Oh, I didn't. I guess I didn't get that. He doesn't really. He just doesn't understand.
I don't think he knows what he's doing. I still don't think that's been revealed to him. I think because he seems very sheepish about the whole thing.
Oh, okay. There's. Oh, I'm scrolling down. There's 7 more pages. I don't have any more notes.
Right. I mean, that sort of ends with them. They go outside, and we get this exchange. "Twilight again," I mused. "Another ending. No matter how perfect the day is, it always has to end. These days mattered so much and ended so quickly." She tensed. "Some things don't have to end." this franchise, for example. It seems like you're going to be able to keep it going just by churning out garbage like this till the end of time.
Oh, I wish they'd gone back right at this point to they just like cut to the ticket booth back at the parking garage. It worked.
The guy's refilling it.
Yes. He was using the blue thermal tape, not the... Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, it ends with him. He says, I'm going to change you, and he jokes about it, and she thinks it's actually going to happen, but he's just kidding, and he leans in to, as the night finally overcame the end of the day, I leaned forward again and kissed the warm skin of her throat.
And when he's doing that, does he feel the... he feels that insane, burning, ravaging pain, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess he's not over it. He got a taste and, you know, still wants it, even though it's been tainted by that gross blood that saved her life in the hospital.
Oh, yeah. And plus, there's she did get hooked on morphine, so there's also a smell of that medicine in her blood as well. Wow. That's quite a trip.
How about it? Yeah. Midnight Sun, 672 pages.
Oh, God.
I did like the in the acknowledgments, she thanks, among others, to so many gifted creators who've made incredible Twilight Saga websites and fan art.
Oh.
And I imagined, you know, Cormac McCarthy putting that in the acknowledgments of one of his books or something. Thanks to all the fan art creators out there. And she said at the very end, finally, the readers who were so patiently eager for this book, I never would have finished without your support. You belong on this page. Please write your name on the line below and give yourself a high five.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, yuck.
So, yeah. I renounce the high five at this point. I've had a good run with it.
No kidding.
We went pretty damn long.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap it up with your what else do we have besides your thoughts about how to place this?
Do you want to do an email or two? I've got a couple good ones.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're going to cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
Bring it on.
All right. This one is from Harris. We might as well address this right off the bat. I know you're going to rank where the book falls in the overall 372 canon, but my question is, where does Edward rank in the list of worst? Your personal definition applies 372 protagonists because he's fairly irredeemable. And they sent the list. So I have done this. I'll share my list with you if you want to let me know what you think.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll read from the bottom up. This is the protagonists in all the books we've read. Bottom of my list, Bob Honey.
Mm-hmm.
Second at the bottom of the list, Zach Lightman, the star of Armada, who was just, you know, just worthless. The gamer with a hot mom.
Yes.
Then I have Ebony Darkness Dementia Raven Way. I don't think I would have enjoyed spending much time with her.
Yeah.
Then Wade Watts, humping a sex robot.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have Edward Cullen.
Oh, okay.
I think I do not care for him. I think his endangerment of the girl is bad. I think his brooding and his thinking about killing other people is very bad. And he's just, he had absolutely no, I don't think, redeeming qualities. He never made me laugh. I never wanted to see what he would do.
No, he didn't seem to, obviously he gained no wisdom. That became a feature of his... When he mused about life and his purpose, he really didn't seem to have. He was deep as a puddle, had nothing going on. Yeah, he's pretty loathsome.
Yeah, and then so right above him, I have Thorn Drumheller, aka Willow, because at least he became the floor. You know,
that's true. Like, that's a
point in his favor.
Sure, sure.
Then I have a tier of people who are dumb but hot. So I have Maxim from The Mister.
Mm-hmm.
Right above him, Susan Fletcher. And those are people who sort of just like went about their day, but at least they were hot and had a lot of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Then above them, Adam Salton of Lair of the White Worm. He was also sort of that, just things sort of happened around him and to him.
Mm-hmm.
Above him, David Bramer and Titus Uno. David Bramer was Moon People. And those are sort of just like the lovable dopes of our canon.
Wait. David Bramer was...
He's assigned the teacher in Moon People,
the
who
teacher.
Goes to space,
okay, yeah.
And goes to Red Lobster.
Red Lobster, yes, yeah, yeah.
Third, I had Jake Cardigan. All things considered, just a not much bad about him, just a by the numbers detective.
Mm-hmm.
Above him, Chad Hand and Dale Rhea.
Mm-hmm.
Trucking through time. And top of the list is Grigner from Eye of Argon, who, you know, just kicked ass and took names.
Wow, he tops the list.
Yeah, what would you change?
I don't have much argument. Probably towards the, as we get towards the more likable ones, I might just shift here and there, but just a nip and a tuck. Nothing serious.
Yeah, Chad and Dale, you know, are sort of the likable doofuses, but they were so similar that I thought it was more of a, it was hard to do it. But I mean, Grigner at least stood out in this from the just how over the top he was, I guess.
Right. What did he do with the rat skeleton?
Sharpened its spine into a sword and then stabbed a guy through the eye with it or something.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So it was mostly the spine. Awesome. All right. Yeah.
And let's see what else we got. Oh, this one I found very amusing. This is from Josh. He says, this is tangential, but where else can I go with it? We're the only place, I think. When there was a 3-week gap between episodes, I made the questionable decision to start reading Twilight and then also the gender-swapped version, Life and Death. It is questionable. Those two versions are mostly the same, other than names and pronouns. I want to say like 85% the same.
Good with Lord.
Yeah, it's amazing. with some obvious changes like Beau's guy friends, I guess that's the gender-swapped Bella, spending fewer hours looking at corsages than Bella's girlfriend spend looking at dresses. But there's one change that's so inconsequential, I've become a bit obsessed with it. In Twilight, after spending a long day with Edward and eating, Bella comes home and has a leftover piece of lasagna. Charlie comes in and asks for the other piece. But in Life and Death, the gender-swapped one, after spending a long day with Edith without eating, Beau comes home and is hungry enough to eat both leftover pieces of lasagna. Charlie, one of the few non-swapped characters, comes in, is disappointed that all of the lasagna is gone, and makes a sandwich. So when we talked about Alice going through all the possibilities and joked about all that garbage that she might see, the McNugget guy, it's literally in one of the books.
Wow. I can't. I'd love to see the boardroom table at which that was discussed.
Here's the text of it. I took another bite of my lasagna so I could be chewing when he came in. His footsteps sounded extra noisy after I'd spent the day with Edith. Did you take all the lasagna? He asked, looking at my plate. Oh, sorry. Here, have some. No worries, Beau. I'll make myself a sandwich. Sorry, I mumbled again.
Wow. That is good. I like that.
Yeah. And then, let's see. I got one more. Let's see. Oh, yeah. This is from Lucas. Just to inform you that Mike got a 60% for Midnight Sun. The extreme scores of 5 out of 5 for Episode 2 and 1 out of 5 for Episode 3 seem to have balanced each other out. This, by the way, was the first time someone got 5 out of 5 since Shadow Moon. 60% is an admirable score for Fanfic or Real. It's better than Mike's previous two outings in My Immortal and Digital Fortress. As such, Mike's average has been raised by 0.13%, leading to an overall score of 57.91%.
Well, I believe it's like the minor leagues, and my salary is tied to performance, so I believe I get a 0.13% raise off of that. So
nice. All right, you can afford another 2 minutes in a hospital if you ever fall through a window. But he also said it's been a while since Connor had the chance to compete more than once on a book. His showings are impressive, with a score of 70%. I have corrected for the error in episode four. His overall score has raised a whole percentage point to 66%. That's 2 out of 3. Another interesting trend is that the first guess was correct every time for both Connor and Mike. In conclusion, you both should be proud, as you both scored slightly above average.
That does make me feel good. I appreciate that.
Proud. That's what I'm experiencing.
Yes.
One last email. This is from Josh. It concludes some comparisons to an old friend of ours. I'm not sure if you've read Greg Sestero's book, The Disaster Artist, but in it he describes a lot of vampire-related details about Tommy Wiseau. Here is a small list of what I was able to piece together, see if you can see any similarities between Tommy and Edward. Tommy has been obsessed with hiding his real age and birthplace, which comes up several times in a book. In private conversations, Tommy allegedly made comments about how cool it would be to live forever. Tommy's fashion choices are clearly made in an attempt to make himself look a lot younger, even though he attacks those efforts with such madcap ferocity that it comes off as completely insane, such as wearing a boyfriend sweater and holding a watch like a bangle. When questioned about certain odd plot points in the room's script, Tommy allegedly explained them by making comments to the room's production teams like, "What if Johnny was a vampire?" And the cherry on the sundae, Greg allegedly had to talk Tommy out of rewriting the Chris R. fight scene on top of the roof because Tommy wanted the scene to end with Johnny's Mercedes-Benz flying from the rooftop and into the sky, revealing that Johnny was a vampire with a flying car.
What?
That would be one of the greatest scenes in movie history if that had happened and they had tried to pull it off on the room's budget.
Wow, is that's in the book? I read the book.
I don't know. I don't remember that either. But he says, considering how much focus there is on vampires trying to be teenagers, vampires driving cars, and startling age differences between love interests and Midnight Sun, my headcanon cannot allow for anyone but Tommy Wiseau to play Edward.
I wouldn't turn that down.
Yeah.
I will add the other thing. I don't know where this sits in the vampire canon, but the trait of when he makes a public appearance, he douses himself with water before.
Right.
I don't know if that's a vampire thing or it's just sort of to confuse the appearance of like, why is he wet? Instead of thinking, why is he not, you know, why does he look so odd?
It's just, why is he wearing three belts? Yeah.
Right.
Why is he hiding his hands inside his sweatshirt?
Yes.
Well, where does the book rank for you? We'll do dumb sentences, but like in just as a, off the top of your head, where does it rank in the canon? Not just the protagonist, but the book itself.
Very low, very low. I did not enjoy this book at all. Mm-hmm. I think she's a terrible, 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 terrible writer. I don't know where to put it. I'm trying, you know, because I won't remember everything. But the length of readings definitely affected me. Did not enjoy that. Didn't care at all about the characters. I think they're just terrible. I think her ability to convey drama and plot is awful, just god awful. So I don't know. I'm pretty low. I mean, I guess for sure, Bob Honey goes below it, and Shadow Moon, and then I think it's all up for grabs after that.
I was thinking third from the bottom myself.
Yeah,
those two fleshing it out.
Really, really dislike this book.
But yeah, it's obviously worse than The Mister. It's worse than Digital Fortress. You know, those were both long, but moved along faster, I feel like, and had, you know, some pretty entertaining details about them. But yeah, just for something so inconsequential and for something that's been so wildly successful, it's that frustration adds to it as well.
Yeah. I think that sums it up. I mean, we obviously joking about the fact that there's a paragraph about how the ticket thing is dispensing tickets, but that's take that book. That's writ large. That's what it all is. Like a really, really boring conversations between really, really boring people, and then just expand them outwards, like blow them up like super detailed and put that in book form. Ooh.
Yeah.
Deadly. Just deadly.
Well, there's no other way to conclude it than by seeing what people thought was the dumbest sentence of this final 108 pages. Let's do that.
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big, big, big. A sentence ends with a period or an exclamation.
All right, you started out. I got to dig out my pile of papers and find mine.
Sounds good. First one is from Heather. I think this is regarding Charlie. His concern for Bella was deeper than his usual carefree frame of mind allowed for. It reminded me of his predicament lacking his usual cheer.
Wow.
This one is from Scott. Pain stabbed through the general region of my obsolete heart.
Oh, God.
Yeah. he said, there have been far worse sentences, but this one made me groan out loud for some reason. So it has that working for it. Joe and Chris both submitted, if you weren't there, she could have fallen through a window anywhere. Chris added, my stepfather was a brittle diabetic double amputee who fell a lot. And if I had heard he fell through a window, I would not be like, well, it was only a matter of time.
Yes, that is a very, very strange.
Justin suggested the next significant thing to happen was the arrival of Bella's mother. And he said, hey, since when is this story limited to significant things happening? Cynthia submitted the image of myself astride the sleek black motorcycle was so appealing that for a second I ignored her, which again is happening as they're racing towards his girlfriend who's being brutally assaulted. Andrew submitted the street was lined with towering eucalyptus trees, quivering leaves more silver than green. And he said, why is the sentence so dumb? Because the narrator makes this passive observation about the foliage while racing through oncoming traffic at 140 miles an hour on a busy residential street in a stolen car. this is Mike. He says, this might be a first ever, a dumb sentence from the acknowledgments. My three amazing children, Gabriel, Seth, and Eli, now all grown men, exclamation mark, who behaved themselves so admirably over the last 15 years that I was able to invest all the time I would have spent worrying about the bad choices they didn't make into worrying about the bad choices my fictional people did make. And he says, when you're aware that the century-old genius characters in your novel are acting dumber than your real-life adolescent children, you might want to spend a little more time on your outline.
Wow.
Blake submitted, when Alice's visions were detailed like this, it was easy to lose track of what would happen in the moment. I said, I think I had a strong response to that earlier. Amanda submitted, I caught her up so her feet were a foot in the air and whispered, you don't look five, into her ear. That was Bella saying, I feel like I'm five, like outside of their prime.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Saying,
so a gross little compliment. Hayden submitted, abstracted, I flipped up to safety and depressed, go too. And he says, it takes a hell of a lot of contents for this sentence to make sense, but I never needed another sentence to begin with the word abstracted.
God, I don't even understand that.
Gina, they melded 100 styles from other decades into new creations that could belong to any time at all. Colin, unobtrusively, I locked the doors. He says, I prefer most of my kidnappings to be unobtrusive as well. I guess that is just as good as starting a sentence with abstracted. Andrew submitted, the five of us were already moving in an intimidating formation toward the garage where they'd parked. I think that's also when they were moving in synchronization.
In synchronization, yeah.
Jennifer submitted, I'd memorized the layout of this terminal in the onboard pamphlet, and we'd been loosed into the branch closest to the exit. And she just questioned, is getting loosed from a plane a common phrase? And Janelle submitted, done with that, I went back to brooding. And she said, that's my entire week summed up. I have a couple that I don't think got covered, but you can go while I find them.
All right, well, this is sort of a central theme of the book, but just taken out of that context, it's just so stupid. I refuse to damn you to an eternity of night, and that's the end of it. So saying it like, you know, chastising your child is weird. And then the other one is, I'm not coming over anymore if Alice is going to treat me like guinea pig Barbie when I do.
Oh, yeah, I highlighted that.
Okay, again, out of context. Wow.
Yeah. She's trying to. She's making you look nice. What do you want her to? She's your best friend. She's also wiping you. Did she do that to Guinea Pig Barbie?
She's Charlie's best friend too.
I have this. I could say this for Arizona. The sun might be ridiculous, but the freeways were exceptional. It's shades of the Mister's rental car being a revelation, and I wanted to scream, but I'm a vampire. And, this was another good one. In the hospital, as Bella's still in her coma, Renee fluttered uselessly over her daughter's inert form.
Wow.
Yeah, not good. Oh, well, I think that does it.
Yeah, that does it indeed. Yeah, we've said all there is to say and much, much, much more. So, I don't know. The next one is a fait accompli, right?
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Yeah. It's just a matter of days, if not weeks at this point in time. And yeah, if you want on board that, sign up on Patreon at patreon.com/372pages, because they're the ones who are getting to, I guess. They're lucky enough to read Ready Player 2 along with us.
Yeah. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I'm not. I think it comes out like 2 days before Thanksgiving. We got to figure that out, how that's going to work. But because they have rudely denied every request we've made for a review copy for the book.
Sometimes I'll get a review copy unasked for in the, would you please read my client's thing? And I was like, I was just kind of expecting that.
Right.
Where's my copy? But we can't even get it when we request it. So, all right. Thank you, everyone who followed along. This is a long slog, but worth it. We're going to get to Ready Player 2. Very excited.
Can't wait.
All right. So long, everyone. 372 Bye. Pages. We'll never get back. Michael J. Nelson.
Connor Listoka. See you next time.